Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
That's kind of tricky. You cannot discharge a student loan through bankruptcy. And what we recommend is one of the most powerful set of documentations that we have in our possession. It's called the Get Rid of the Student Loan Package. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Click on the link to hawkerarchives.org and examine the package. If you click on the little words underneath the package, the drop-down box will come about. And you can do a little brief reading there, but it is specifically designed to actually cancel the contract. Along with all of the packages in TahakaArchives.org, we give you a master library. In fact, we just put a ton of information in there under Administrative Procedure Doc. We've also added new information under the Moorish American Government. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And the information is there available for you to cancel those contracts. Welcome, Moors and Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And this evening, we are dealing with the Obama deception. We're going to deal with questions like, what is the attack against hip-hop? What part does the Illuminati play? Who are the players and who are the victims in this thing? Is there murder involved? Is Tupac really dead? These questions and much, much more we're going to deal with here this evening. I'm going to do my best to try to get all of this information in. We got some very, very powerful revelations that will come out for those of us who are not aware of what's going on inside the hip-hop industry, the music industry inside the United States. This story is actually stranger than fiction, the type of things, and we want to look at how we're being affected inside the United States with what's going on with the powers that be that are in control of the advertising, the media, the music industry, and so on and so forth. So I want you all to stay tuned. And keep in mind, after the first hour, we will open up the line so you can raise your hand. We'll probably go a few minutes over the first hour. But this is some very, very important information, and this is something that we all need to pay attention to so that we can know what's going on. I mean, let's get a real close look at this thing. I don't do a whole lot of on hip-hop, but it's very, very important for us to understand what our children face with in this industry. And all too often we have a lot of kids growing up, they want to imitate the people that they see on television and in the videos and all of this kind of stuff. So let's take a realistic look at what's going on inside this industry. We're going to start with an interview between George B. Wells and Professor Griff. He wants to be called Griff, so between John B. Wells and Griff, and I thought it was a very, very powerful interview because the brother, he brought the information to the table just totally like it is. So we want to get this information. We want to take a look at it. And as we go along, we want to be cognizant of what's going on. At the same time, I would like to encourage you to listen to this broadcast over and over. Now, I am offering my free articles. For those of you who have not gotten these articles, just send me an email to taraka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that to you. That's taraka53@hotmail.com, and we'll send you Secrets of America, the 14th Amendment. We'll also send you the Commerce Game Exposed and the Truth About the 14th Amendment, the U.S. Bankruptcy and the Moors, and so on and so forth. So send that email to them, and I get that right there to you. Those of you who have a problem with your mortgage, you got student loans, you got all kind of pressure with your child support, if the Internal Revenue Service is trying to deal with you, go over to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, then call me. And we can find out what's going on directly and point you in the right directions and get you set up. We just added a brand new ton of information to the Archives Master Library, so you want to get over there to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Okay, now, since we got so much, I'm going to cut this short and get right down into the nitty-gritty of this thing.
Out
okay?
of the deep range and into the deep strange. Come at the hour, come at the mothership that is Coast to Coast AM. Good evening and welcome to the program, everybody. John B. Wells in for George Norrie tonight. Round one of a three-round weekend for me and you. And as you know, I am the highest-ranking officer of the mothership who is still the cook. Why? Because I like to stir things up. Throw in a little spice, a little flavor. And tonight, I think you will find to be no exception. You know, people have been sending emails going, ha, ha, we're about to have World War III and Syria's coming apart and you're going to talk about hip-hop tonight? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me orient you to the program tonight. Let me start off with this. This gets the Best Meme of the Week award. And here it is. Syrians have been killed by Syrians, therefore we must kill Syrians to send the message that Syrians must not kill Syrians. Only we should be able to do that, with or without congressional approval. And that pretty much puts it into focus. People are going mad all over the place. Huffington Post ran a thing about Newsweek's article. They want the president to hit the road, and Putin saying no, no, and the Pope's getting into it, and France is going, don't think so, and the votes aren't there to do it. So nobody really understands why this big rush to the Syrian conflict, but it'll all shake out. And I am quite sure that the motives behind this insistence on intervening because of the loss of 1,700 poor souls to a gas attack, I'm just wondering where everybody was when the other 100,000 were lost, but maybe that's just me. I don't think it is. I think it might be you too. But you know, you hear about this Illuminati thing, the shadow government, the hidden hand, the little triangle with the eyeball in it. Well, I don't know, but I'm getting the idea there's going to be a little smudge underneath that eyeball after our program tonight. I am delighted to report to you that the first-time guest on the program is Griff. Griff is, he is many things. He's writer, producer, musician, platinum recording, spoken word artist, lecturer, founding member of the revolutionary hip-hop group Public Enemy. And his years in the music and entertainment industry combined with in-depth research. I have three of his books right here. These books and his experience lend lots of insight on how the global elite are using, yes, hip-hop in particular, and the entertainment industry as a whole to brainwash and control our culture. We're going to talk with Griff for a couple hours, and we'll take a couple of hours of your telephone calls. Griff feels like it. We'll bring on some of your calls in the second hour. But he has a lot to say. And so just step away from this war thing for a minute, because as I indicated, the motives for this the insistence on this conflict will become more and more visible as the days go by. Now, oddly enough, looking at a book by Griff, The Illuminati's Takeover of Hip-Hop, The Psychological Covert War on Hip-Hop, begins with a story about the father of spin, Edward L. Bernays, and the birth of PR, public relations. Now, check this out. The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses, that's us, is an important element in democratic societies, Bernays argued. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. In almost every act of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or our ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind. One more quote from Edward Bernays. If we understand the mechanism and motives of the group mind, is it not possible to control and regiment the masses according to our will without their knowing about it? The recent practice of propaganda has proved that it is possible, at least up to a certain point and within certain limits. He called this practice of persuasion the engineering of consent. Now, this is going to be quite a stretch for me to come up with anything that is even acceptable for Griff, founding member of Public Enemy, but I'll give it a shot. Here comes. People talk about Illuminati, and a lot of that stuff is true. And you'll know more, because Jambi's going to talk hip-hop with you. And Griff, the Illuminati's psychological covert war on hip-hop, and ultimately, our entire culture, or what's left of it. Welcome to the program. Griff, how'd I do?
You did absolutely fine. Very well put.
You know what? I've heard rap. I've heard hip hop, but I never really. I'm square, man. I'm just kind of square. So I thought, you know what? I want to know what this is. I mean, is it like Led Zeppelin lyrics with rapping over it? I mean, what is it? So I got into it a little bit, and then the more I went into it, the more interested I became in it. And it seems that now I got Wikipedia, their version of it, but. A broad conglomerate of artistic forms that originated as a specific street subculture within South Bronx during the 70s in New York. Is that true?
Very much true, but deeper than that. It came over in the genetic code of black people from Africa to America. So the four fundamental elements of hip-hop, we've always participated and have done these things. It's just that we had to transform them during the 70s because of what was going on in the streets of New York and around the country. You know, the music classes and the schools were shutting down. Black exploitation films were on the rise, and actually defining who and what we are as a people. And we brought it right back to the rare and raw essence of who we are. We took it back to the streets and turned the garbage cans over, and we beat on the garbage cans in the park, and we did poetry to that, and we just brought that out of ourselves. Every people, Italians, Jews, Mexicans, everyone entertain themselves. They perform for themselves. They don't have to do it for anyone else. And so it is with black people. And we did the spoken word, and we spoke about, you know, the things that we were going through. We spoke about where we lived, where we're from, what we experienced. And
It took on you know, a life of its own as an art form. But you had to be there up in Cedar Park in the Bronx late at night when the lights went out and we rigged the light post and we invented this thing called the mixer. And we took two mm-hmm. turntables and stole our parents' and our grandparents' records, and we found that it emptied scream or yell or horn or saxophone or drum beat on a record, and we went back and forth, and we called it rap, we called it hip-hop.
All right, so is there or is there not a difference between rap and hip-hop?
There's a big, gigantic difference.
Okay.
Rap is something that you do. Hip-hop is something that you are. Hip-hop is higher infinite power healing our people. Hip-hop is higher infinite power healing our people. Hip-hop is based on four fundamental elements: graffiti, DJing, emceeing, and b-boying, which is based on four fundamental elements of the universe: earth, air, fire, and water. As so eloquently put by a friend of mine, Black Dot, who wrote the book Hip-Hop Decoded, from its ancient origins to its modern-day matrix. And we base it on those four fundamental elements, and then we synthesize the four elements with the fifth element, which is knowledge itself.
All right. Yeah, I'm looking at this thing. It says, DJ Africa Mbambada of the hip-hop collective Zulu Nation outlined the pillars of hip-hop culture, to which he coined the terms emceeing, DJing, b-boying, and graffiti writing. So, wow. All right.
So, but if you look at it from a historical perspective, graffiti is actually the hieroglyphs.
Oh, yeah.
So if you look at the DJing, which is just nothing but the drum, which is the heartbeat, which is the djembe coming out of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at b-boying, which is dancing, celebrating, you know, body movement, sacred geometry. And if you look at emceeing, which is the griot, those that told the story. When you sat on your grandfather's lap and he told you those stories, I bet you can remember some of those stories till today, right or wrong.
Well, you know what, I'm conflicted over that one. I'll tell you why. I lost both my grandparents, my grandfathers, before they were gone before I was, well, one of them was gone before I was born. The other one died at 96, and, you know, he was pretty out there by the time he had my mother late in life, so man, there wasn't any connection there, really.
Oh.
But I miss that, though.
Oh, yes, it's a valuable thing in a child's life, because Grandpa tell you those stories as you sat on his lap, man. And those stories stick with you because they're pregnant with hidden meaning. And a lot of times you're well into your 20s and 30s before those kind of things hit you and say, wow, my granddad taught me that. I should have listened back in the day. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. You know, Griff, one of the reasons that this, you know, there was like, wow, are you really going to do this? Like, yeah, I'm really going to do it. I want to do it, because I've seen some of your stuff on YouTube, and I know you know our friend Alex Jones, and
yes,
and I know he thinks a lot of you and the way you think, and
yeah,
so
Alex Jones is a good guy. Yes.
Yeah, he is a good guy. He's tip of the spear. And here's the thing: I didn't want to get into one of these, gee, you people are very interesting, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I just love black people. They're so uninhibited. It's like, oh, shut up. I mean, we've all
right.
been through all of that.
Right.
It's like we want to understand, but we can't. There's something standing in the way, and it appears to be more along the lines of an engineered division than anybody could possibly imagine.
Yes, and I think you spoke volumes when you read the quote from my book, The Psychological Covert War on Hip-Hop. It talks about Edward Bernays. He talked about the unconscious manipulation. And this is what's going on when it comes to relationship between the human family. And we're talking about getting along and coming together on subjects that affect not only black but white and everyone else in the human family. We tend to not want to get along, and not by our own doing. It's just it's there in the way. It's an unseen thing. Like, I guess the greatest reality is the unseen reality. But it's very, 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 very real, and it does stand in the way. And it takes people like yourself, Griff, the beautiful staff that you have there, Dean Ryan, who's a friend of mine, and Alex Joneses of the world, and to kind of break these walls down to say, listen, we have a common goal. One family here, one goal, one destiny, one truth, and we need to recognize that.
You know, it seemed to me, and straighten me out if I'm wrong here, because, I mean, this is an open forum, and just let it rip, you know. It seemed like when that disastrous thing that happened with Zimmerman and Trayvon, and that was just a disaster, an absolute disaster. It seemed to me that there were some elements out there of the what I'd like to think of as the shadow government, the hidden PR people. They were trying real hard to get the races crossed with each other, but there seems to be that 2012 awakening we all wanted seems to be sinking in because nobody really went for it. It was like, yeah, we're going to get no, you know, I don't think anybody's going to win anything if we get crazy with each other. And it just didn't happen. And I think a bunch of people were really disappointed.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were disappointed. And I think a lot of people were sitting back playing armchair revolutionary with the remote in hand waiting for it to happen. And since it didn't happen, it almost seemed like they shifted into a plan B.
Isn't that the truth? And it comes in many forms, doesn't it? I would even go so far as to say, why don't we just bypass Congress and go on into Syria? Nobody really understands why we would do such a thing. But anyway, we can get into that. We got time, and we'll take it anywhere you want to go.
Right. I just think that in order for the vast majority of those that listen to hip hop to become informed, even about situations like Syria, I think that message is carried on a certain frequency to the black neighborhood. And Chuck D said it best. He says rap is the CNN for black people. And unless it's put in a song, unless it's put in a way that we understand it, we can wrap our spirit around it, we're not going to get it. We're just going to become cannon fodder and fall for whatever the government tends to throw our way.
Well, you know, in the end, it seems to be all about power and nothing but. You buy a tall building, and once you've had your drink and your romance up on the rooftop, and you've done that, then I guess the only thing there is to do is go buy up a whole bunch of other tall buildings and go party on top of them just to say you did.
Yeah.
And I think that this power trip is just I think these people in control are, with a few exceptions, hopefully there are enough exceptions to prevent a disaster of a biblical scale, I think they're psychotic.
Very much so. July 16, 2008, I did an interview in a bookstore, only going there to buy a few books that I was interested in trying to find. And I got put in front of a camera by a friend of mine, Marcus Williams, and that short footage ended up in Alex Jones's film, The Obama Deception. And a few people interviewing me, asking me, do I regret that? Because a lot of black people, knowing that it was in my book, Analytics, 20 years of conversations, interviews with Public Enemy's Minister of Information, Professor Griff, and they said that, do I regret it? I said, absolutely not. And they said, well, why is that? I said, let's look at what's going on the global scene today. And I wrote in that, I said in that particular film, The Obama Deception, that President Obama was going to sign off on AFRICOM, and they were going to go back into Africa to recolonize Africa. And multinational corporations were going to put their stamp on Africa. And they're never leaving. And that's exactly what's going on.
China's real interested in Africa, too, you know.
Exactly. And when this was mentioned back then, those same people are apologizing to me today. I said, no need to apologize. I'm not waiting around on your apology. Let's become smart and intelligent. Let's come together and let's study this thing and look into it so we can make a difference with that unborn generation, your children's children's children.
You know, it makes you wonder. This has been dogging me for years, why it's okay for us to do so much business with the communist Chinese, and now they're all over the place. In fact, the Chinese military has offered South Africa all of its expertise, gear, whatever they want, and the Ministry of Defense down there says, absolutely, thank you so much. You come on in. You are welcome to be here. We'll take whatever you got. Doesn't that strike you as just extraordinarily incestuous? The relationship between so-called capitalism and communism?
Yes, but I think it's a marriage that was waiting to happen under the right circumstances. China has something to gain. I don't know I don't know if anybody can name too many things that grow in China. So China needs Africa. And those precious minerals that sit under the feet of Africans in Africa, China needs. The thing that hurts my soul, much less my heart, is the fact that these laws that they're putting in place that Africans cannot own the land. We have no land rights. And this is sickening to my spirit, to my soul. And you're going to start treating Africans as though we're visitors in Africa.
Yep, well, the English are getting a little bit of a dose of that as they become Islamicized more by the day.
Yeah, I see that. And when I read that, it's like, wow. I mean, those of us that understand this particular dynamic, especially those of us that have experienced and read and understood what Zbigniew Brzezinski put in his book, The Grand Chessboard, we better get this lesson real quick. And if we don't, we're going to find ourselves behind the fence, man. And it's not only going to be black people. I mean, I hope people are listening to what we're saying. They don't care.
I have a feeling. I'm going to go out on the clothesline a little ways here, and I'm just going to say I think by the time it's all over with, the brothers and the cowboys are going to be each other's best buddies. That's what I think.
Quite put that way, but yeah, the brothers and the cowboys. Right, say that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Griff. When we come back, I want to talk with you about your involvement and how you came to be involved in the first Obama deception. I understand there's the Obama Deception 2 coming up pretty soon to be released, I think, in December with our friend Alex Jones at the helm. So let's, as they used to say on the cell phones, please enjoy the music. And I'll change it a little bit while the commercials are loaded, and we'll be right back with Griff, founding member of the group Public Enemy. He has a lot to say, and we would do well to hear it on Coast to Coast AM. Lots of triangles and eyeballs out there. One time I saw an ad in a magazine. I thought, oh, wow, look at that. And it was about the 1966 Pontiac Grand Prix. It has such great performance with that huge engine they put in it, because this was a big luxury car. It wasn't of the sport variety, not really. And the quote is from the ad is, surprising the kids haven't caught on to it yet. Well, the kids apparently have caught on to triangles with their fingers and the eye looking through it, and then covering one side of the face, only one eye is looking out. And there's this thing called a 360 arrangement, whereby a management company that takes over an artist, bands are hard to control, single artists, a little bit easier. And the legend is they control the management, the handlers control everything you wear, everything you say, how you look, where you are, and how you act. 360, sort of a full-spectrum dominance of the individual artist, if you will. I want to talk about the Obama deception and Griff's involvement in it, and the infiltration, or is it an infiltration, or is it the basic construct of the entertainment industry, and specifically, hip-hop music and its followers. We'll be right back with Griff and me, John B., in for George Norrie tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Stand by. Griff, tell us about how you got involved in the first Obama deception, and you have a bigger presence in the second one coming up.
Yes, I got involved with this Alex Jones' film, The Obama Deception, simply because we did the research and we started putting together the information to see who this guy was, Obama. And a lot of things were manufactured, and a lot of things were just not true. It's just part of the brilliant PR team that they had working on the minds of the masses of black people. And they presented Obama as this Christ-like figure that could kind of do no wrong. And they just kind of tapped into a void that was missing on a spiritual level, mixed with politics, with black people. So with this in mind, You know, I told the story a few minutes ago, when I walked into the bookstore, and my friend, friend of mine said, well, can I get you on film about what you think about this whole Obama thing? So when I gave him my my 30-minute spiel on what I felt and what I thought and some of the research that we've done, that particular footage ended up in the Obama deception. Then I had the pleasure of meeting some of the team over the phone, the Obama deception. And they talked about doing the Obama deception too, but at that particular time, I had put my energy and my efforts behind Cynthia McKinney and Rosa Clemente. When Cynthia McKinney was running for the ticket for the Green Party presidential ticket,
yep.
Cynthia McKinney and Rosa Clemente, and I just thought that was a better team for me. Two women that probably have a different perspective, and I just really never felt for the second, third, fourth, and fifth coming of Christ, Barack Hussein Obama Jr.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have some opinions on his effect? Has there been an effect on pop culture and the minority class or not? Seems like everything's kind of business as usual. The only thing is now we're starting to find out things that were there, but we just didn't see.
Well, there's one strange thing about Professor Griff. Since my early days with putting this Public Enemy thing together, I try not to come off and give people my opinion and how I feel today. A lot of times, you know, we can't buy a stick of bubble gum with that. But if we go into and dive into the facts, I think we would come out a little bit better. In the 10th degree, which is the 10th chapter of my book, The Psychological Covert War on Hip-Hop, The Illuminati's Takeover of Hip-Hop, it's entitled Black Music and the Psychoanalytical Destruction of a Stolen Legacy. And I talk about subliminal persuasion. It refers to the use of subliminally presented stimuli and messages presented to individuals beneath the level of the conscious awareness that they are intended to influence their attitudes, choices, and actions. And that quote is very timely when it comes to Barack Obama positioning himself with hipsters and rap artists and hip-hop artists. And I did a history of rap artists that were actually invited to the White House and that had a political agenda. So I talked about Boots Riley and RZA and Modal Technique and Russell Simmons and P. Diddy's Vote or Die, which is a hell of a thing to me. You're giving young people that don't understand the voting process two choices. You either vote or you die. That was very critical. So when Barack Obama took to the stage, Ludacris, Will I Am, Common, and they just kind of got a few artists to kind of speak in his behalf and kind of give it that hip, fly, dope kind of vibe and look to it, so young people could let their guard down and not even look at the agenda, the issues. And I think young blacks, as well as young whites, fell for it hook, line, and sinker. So, yeah, there's definitely an agenda there. And they rode on the backs of young whites and hip-hop right on to the White House. Jay-Z was a personal friend of, or is a personal friend of Barack Obama. Bragged about texting him, and Ludacris made a song. Will I Am made a song, as you know. And these are the kind of things that if young people that participate and resonate with hip hop and rap understood the agenda and stop going for the fanfare and stop believing the hype, as Flavor Flav and Chuck D would say, I think we would fare a little bit better. And understand what the agendas are now in the second term.
Let me put a few dots on this paper, and you connect them, or just wad the paper up and toss it over in the corner and go, nah, I can't make a picture out of that. We have the money aspect of hip hop music, and there's a lot of money out there. Jay-Z's made a bunch of it,
right?
And we have the PR capacity or capability to use. You know, it was like this young white kid told me, I said, who are you going to vote for? This was the first election. He said, I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. I said, why? He goes, he's a cool black guy. He smokes cigarettes. I said, well, what else? He goes, no, that's enough for me. He was 18. He was ready to go vote. And I'm like, oh, Lord, I'm not sure this 18-year-old vote was a good idea. But let me ask you this. How would you respond if someone were to suggest that, no, wait a minute, if the Illuminati is behind the success of these artists through infiltration, is it racist to suggest that people like Jay-Z would not have become a success without Illuminati intervention?
No, it's not. It's not racist. First of all, we have to define racism.
Please.
And then once we define racism, we have to look at the mechanism that was set up. And if we deal with racism as a system, as opposed to being prejudiced, as opposed to any of these other terms that really misrepresent what racism is truly about, and we do it a disservice. And we do have to understand that if racism is a system, we would understand Jay-Z's role in fueling this Illuminati demonic agenda when it comes to hip hop. So it's not racist. It's very real. But we also have to understand who and what the Illuminati is, and know and understand that Jay-Z is a peon. He's a peasant. He's not even allowed in the club. He can't shine the shoes of these people that make trillions and trillions of dollars.
Do we know who they are, Griff?
I think we feel the effects. We can name some of the names, but I think it's the very names and the people that are at the core of it, we would probably never know.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yep.
Why are we seeing all these triangles and eyeballs? What's going on? Is this the kids have caught on to it, or is there something deeper there?
And I think this is where myself and a lot of people tend to go our separate ways, because Michael Tessarian, I'm not sure if you're familiar with his work.
No.
The subversive use of sacred symbols in the media. Michael Tessarian.
Yes, sorry. I do know you mean.
Right. And he said it best. These are sacred symbols that they use for subversive purposes. So we do find these symbols in Africa. We do find these symbols in the Ifa and the Yoruba traditions and spiritual African spiritual systems. They're not demonic to us, but they've taken these symbols, these sacred symbols, and they use them for subversive purposes. And until we under what they do, though, but since we resonate with them from a deeper level than the surface, when we talk about the soul, this is why they call the music that we black people listen to soul music, because that's where we connect with it at. Now, if they take our signs and symbols, the sacred signs and symbols, and use them for subversive purposes, of course we're going to resonate with it. But they put the demonic twist to it, and then they got us. And it becomes so fly and hip to the average Puerto Rican and Mexican and Asian and white kid. It's like we just follow one another right into ignorance. And we need to understand that. But these are sacred symbols.
You're talking spiritual warfare here in conflict. You're talking. This is spiritual warfare disguised as color warfare.
Exactly. And I think we need to understand that. A lot of us just don't. Dr. Frances Cress Wilson, in her book, The ISIS Papers, The Keys to the Colors, said racism, white supremacy is the local and global power system and dynamic, structured and maintained by persons who classify themselves as white, whether consciously or subconsciously determined. That's very important. It says whether consciously or subconsciously determined, which consists of patterns of perception, logic, symbol formation, thought, speech, action, and emotional response as conducted simultaneously in all areas of people activity. And those areas are economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war for the ultimate purpose of white genetic survival. And if we understand it to that degree, it also says that, you know, they wouldn't mind using chemical, biological, and last but not least, psychological warfare.
Mm-hmm.
So why not use rap? Why not use hip-hop? Why not do what Zbigniew Brzezinski said in controlling one person, we can control the masses? Because it's easier to control the masses as it is to kill them. And then later on he said it's easier to kill them as opposed to control them. And that's what we're seeing now. This whole idea of lying about Syria using chemical weapons, this trick has been played before. You and I both know this.
Over and over again. And in fact, the UN inspectors were told you can determine whether or not chemical weapons were used, but you are not to disclose whose weapons they belong to, whose weapons they are. I mean, I challenge anybody to make up anything so ridiculous.
Yes,
and then
the
have
truth.
The public go along with it.
Right, and the information is out there, but we're too lazy and fat just to just go and do a basic research. When I first heard it, I went to my library, and one of the first books I pulled off my shelf was Clouds of Secrecy, The Army's Germ Warfare Test Over Populated Areas,
mm-hmm.
Leonard A. Cole. And this is very real. I've had this book for some time. So the information is out there. You could go and just Google 10 chemical weapon attacks Washington does not want you to talk about, a history of chemical and biological weapons used against not foreign governments, but the United States, the Americans. And this is very simple and very plain, and it's put out there for all of us to read. But we look at something that's going on way over in Syria as though it's brand new, and it's not brand new. It's an old trick.
You know, this psychological covert war on hip-hop, your book, this is a very – this stuff is just knocking my socks off page after page. Can, by the way, his website is pgriff.info, yeah? pgriff.info. Are your books available on your website?
Yes, they are. pgriff.info, yes, books are available there.
And Amazon, somewhere else, or strictly on the site? Okay.
If you just type in Professor Griff's books on Google, it'll come up. Alex Jones has them. Amazon has them. Yes, it is.
And I got one too. And thanks for sending it to me.
Oh, no problem. No problem.
I'm looking on page 77. It says apparently Jay-Z is an Aleister Crowley fan.
Oh yes. A lot of times we have to introduce Alex Crowley to the people to let people know who Aleister Crowley is, and I think people would have a better understanding on why JC is wearing a hoodie that says "Do what thy will," which is the whole of the law, and how does that play into hip hop and controlling the minds and the masses of the people?
I wonder.
It's the thing that you mentioned earlier, these 360 deals, which once you sign off on the deal, it's really truly for a lifetime, and you sign away all your ancillary properties, and they control 360 degrees of your entire life. And this is very critical. So I often put this out here, and people say to me, well, what does that even mean? I said, you know, all of us have dreams about being rich and famous and popular and in the music industry, but these contracts that we're actually signing our souls to the devil, this particular agenda that they have hidden inside of these 360 deals. If you and I made a CD, and from the CD we're able to take it and these ancillary properties that surround the CD, merchandise, live shows, endorsements, they control everything.
I'm interested in hearing what you have to say about Illuminati rituals in hip-hop and the signs throughout the industry. I mentioned a couple of times, it's more and more prevalent. Now, what's the idea here? Is this just symbolic bling for the people, or is there a message being spread here? I mean, I think we've pretty much established that we're talking spiritual warfare here. We really are. You've used the term demonic several times.
Right.
So, I mean, is this a conditioning through these symbols?
It's nonverbal communication, and 90% of all communication is nonverbal. And if we understand that, then what Tex Mars said in his book Codex Magica, it takes on a whole new meaning now. Because if we talk about the secret signs, mystery systems, and hidden codes of the Illuminati, we're talking about a whole entire language that they use to speak to one another. So now the 666, now the mark of the beast, now the all-seeing eye, takes on a whole different meaning, because now it's resonating with young people via the music, and they're treating it like it's a fad, like it's hip, like it's cool, like it's the thing to do. It's the T-shirt to wear. It's the hat that you wear backwards, and now it's the belt buckle. And now it's become the sign that you throw up at the end of your song on stage in front of 100,000 people. And now you're in. So much so that young kids were reporting to have murdered their friends to get into the Illuminati.
So,
very real.
So when you talk about a 360 deal, that you literally have signed your life over, your whole life. I mean, your actual life, your existence on the earth. It's not just your property.
Exactly. Simply because I give people the test, and the people in your listening audience, and you could even take the test. Just get a pen, piece of paper, and draw a circle. Cut it in half. Cut it in half. Once again, you get 8 pieces of the pie. Draw a smaller circle in the middle and put CD. That's your CD that you made in the studio. Fine. The record company wants that. They paid you $50,000 to come up with, put your music together, 10 songs. Fine. What happens to those 10 songs now? Because no longer can you go to Best Buy somewhere and buy the CD. You have to download it now. Now who are you in the bed with? These multinational corporations and these communication companies, because someone has to get it to the phone. The iPhone, the smartphone for idiots, and the rest of these devices. One piece of the pie, you might have endorsements. Well, now who are you in bed with? The other piece of the pie may be merchandise. Now who are you in bed with? And all of these people are in cahoots with one another. So wherever you go, you're being controlled. And how long do you sign this deal for? And where have you signed this deal for? Now they have these terms in the contracts now. The galaxy, the universe. They've already talked about colonizing Mars and having music from the galaxy. So there's nowhere you can run, nowhere you can hide.
Well,
I say we stand and we fight. We stand on principle and we fight the spiritual war, right here on planet Earth.
Just like the staff sergeant said in Battle Los Angeles, we'll make our stand here and show these bleeps who they're bleeping with. Griff, this is a real pleasure chatting with you, and we got another hour together, so let's get the break in the news and all that stuff done and come right on back. Visit his site, pgriff.info, pgriff.info.
Okay, well, this is the end of the first segment, and we're going to go into the second segment. And his website is www.pgriff.info, www.pgriff.info. Okay? Hold on a second.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation.
I want to talk to you about being on a merry-go-round. You know, a merry-go-round will go round and round and round and round, and if it doesn't stop, you'll remain in the same position, but in order to get off that merry-go-round, you're going to have to put into some effort. And this is pretty much what happens to us on a regular basis. We get up in the morning, shower, shave, get a little bite to eat, make a beeline to work. We get a lunch break, coffee break, another lunch break, and then at the end of the day, we go home. We do this for 360 days a year. And at the end of the year, we're looking for something different to happen financially, but we don't realize that we're in the same position that we're in the year before because we keep doing the same thing. The definition of insanity is keep doing the same thing over and over, looking for a different result. And, of course, no different result is going to happen unless you put forth some effort to get off the merry-go-round. Now, one of the major solutions to the problem is to look at your current situation. If you have a mortgage, if you got credit card debt, if you got student loan, if you got a problem with the Internal Revenue Service, if you would cancel these contracts, if you have a mortgage that gives you whatever, if you're paying $800-$900 a month on a mortgage, if you cancel that, that's $900 a month in your pocket. If you have a student loan, you're paying $500-$600 a month on that. That's $500-$600 a month in your pocket. If you Internal Revenue Service asks you for $10,000 that you owe them, you cancel that contract. That's $10,000 that you don't give them. It's very, very simple math. But if we don't make any effort to get off the merry-go-round, we remain in the same position. I would like to recommend you to go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and the package is available there now for you to cancel those contracts.
Wouldn't you think on this whole Syria thing that somebody would have said, hey, Vladimir, since you've got a Navy base there with, you know, Russian insignia all over it, why don't you do something about the conflict over there? But instead, Russia says it will help Syria if USA attacks, sends more naval ships to the coast. Buchanan says our boys are to be mercenaries of sheikhs, sultans, and emirs. And retired Justice Sandra Day O'Connor laments alarming degree of public ignorance. Now, all of that said, Zbigniew Brzezinski himself said the reason the attack has been stalled is because of alternative media. So I would say let's just keep it rolling, and we'll be right back with Griff. I like to call him Professor Griff, but he likes to just be called Griff. And some of your calls, too, on Coast to Coast AM. John B. in for George Norrie. Please stand by. Griff, this really is an amazing book, and I'm not just blowing sunshine at you either. It's The Illuminati's Takeover of Hip-Hop, The Psychological Covert War on Hip-Hop. You got all kinds of things in here. This is amazing. And, you know, Coast to Coast listeners, they like a little scary stuff. They like conspiracy. I'm sort of the conspiracy guy a little bit, you know, but you know, I like to get out there a little bit, but I am sure that they do not know about this one. So let me just read this from page 89 of your book, which is, it's almost 300 pages long. From saying, I don't pray to God, I pray to Goti, to calling himself Jehovah, a name people have taken to mean Jehovah, one of the Hebrew names for God. Even Beyonce is not left out of all this. Her alter ego, Sasha Fierce, has been said to be Beyonce possessed by a demon. Not to mention the goat head ring she's been sporting recently, which conspiracy theorists are calling the head of Baphomet, which is notably the symbol of the Church of Satan. It's... So, this is not just a fad. They're serious about this? They're embracing this mentality?
Yes, not only embracing the mentality, this particular mentality, carrying out the Luciferian agenda, they're passing it on. They're passing it on as the hip, cool thing to do. And sad but true, and the little ones, 8, 9, 10 years old, I seen this just last weekend. We performed at the Made in America festival with Jay-Z, Beyonce, 2 Chainz, and some other about 30 other groups. And the audiences are getting younger. And this has become popular entertainment now. It's almost like a fad. But you couldn't have told John Todd this. John Todd was one. He said he was in the Illuminati, broke away from the Illuminati. And to make a long story short, the short story shorter, he basically said that they use these record companies and use certain rooms in the record companies, and they set up altars, and they put your music on these altars, and they do rituals around your music. So by the time your music hit the sacred airways and it resonates with the people's energy centers, the chakras, it does something different. So now when the artist comes to your town and you see the artist performing these particular songs and they take on this alter ego like Sasha Fierce with Beyonce, and Nicki Minaj has a character called Roman. This is by her own admission. The young 13-year-old white gay guy that lives inside of her. And he's just dying to get out. This is Nicki Minaj. Says this character takes over her. Like Sasha Fierce takes over Beyonce when she performs.
You know, this is not too much of a stretch for me. I'm a little bit older than you, if I'm reading the numbers correctly, and meaning if my guess is good. And I can remember when a murder would shock the entire country.
Right.
Now it's everywhere.
Yes.
I got 2 questions for you, and I'm just going to make a note to ask you this in a minute. What is causing all of, in your opinion, what's causing all this violence? It's nuts. It's crazy. I don't know how many people are gonna be whacked out over the weekend just in Chicago, because Chicago just keeps coming up. It's a great town, and it's, you know, it's a notorious town. It all started with the gangster stuff back in the Roaring Twenties, and then into the early '30s, before Prohibition was repealed. But what do you make of all of this? Have you ever seen anything like it in your life? It's not slowing down. It's escalating.
Yeah, it is escalating. And I've never ever in my 53 years, my 53 rotations, my solar rotations around the sun, I've never seen this ever in my life. And I've met with people. I've talked to elders. It's hard to make any sense of it. People are not pulling from that center. And if the center is whatever, you know, you call God, or whatever you call that divine essence or divine intelligence, I think people have lost that, to be honest with you.
Do you believe in any way, shape, or form that music is transmitting either overtly or subliminally messages that are encouraging impressionable minds to snap off and go do these things? They must be aware that they're throwing their lives away, particularly if they get caught. Then they're going to be incarcerated or executed for it. I mean, would you even hazard a guess at why the perpetrators of these crimes don't even seem to care what the consequences are?
Now, you hit the nail on the head. They don't care. And simply because when you start mixing meth with ecstasy and you come up with Molly and you're cracking Molly and you're sprinkling Molly in weed and you're drinking, you just lose your mind, you become a zombie. You know, the lights are on, but no one's home, and you're just carefree. You don't care.
Meth and ecstasy together.
Yes.
Ugh. And this drug
is on, and then they take the weed, marijuana, and they spray it with roach spray.
Roach spray.
And you're sprinkling Molly over it, and now you have a deadly, deadly, deadly combination.
Well, I don't mean to digress here, but you got to be pretty desperate for a buzz to go spraying roach spray on something you're smoking.
Well, yeah, you visit some of these high schools, it gets deeper than that. Sorry to tell you.
Well, tell me. Tell everybody. Because we're not going to get it on any of the three-letter networks.
But listen, who would think? See, you and I, we don't even think in these terms.
No.
But now, but you're talking about you 13, 14 years old, and the average high is not getting you high. You crack the code and you crack the safe to mom's liquor cabinet. That's not getting you high enough. And you blind local drugs and local drug deal. That's not getting you high enough. You know, so in comes these new synthetic kind of drugs. So they're taking ecstasy and they're mixing it with meth, amphetamine, and they're calling this Molly, and it's hitting the streets now. And now they're having Molly's mentioned in songs, popular culture and entertainment. And it's the drug to do. You and I may not be able to deal with it, you know, at our age, but these 13, 14-year-olds, they're doing this like it's absolutely nothing and not caring. And they'll fall asleep for 2 or 3 days and wake up, eat and go back to sleep and crack some more Molly.
Let's just fraternally hold hands for a second and go ahead and jump off this cliff. Is this being turned into a death culture where the members of the culture want to deliver it and then experience it themselves? Is the reality just not suitable? Is it some sort of, if it is spiritual warfare, and certainly there's a strong case to be made for that, is that what it's all about? I mean, I think I just answered my own question.
Right, you answered your own question, but deeper than that, if you've been sitting in front of the television with the video controller, the video game controller in your hand, you've been living in a virtual world any old damn way. So it's nothing is real. How many people have you murdered in the last 3 hours sitting in front of your television screen with the video game in your hand?
You're watched and we're all right with it, yeah.
Right, exactly. So death becomes commonplace for you.
You know, that thing is running around over the internet now. It's been out for some months. You seen the one of the freedom fighters? Notice how despots always hijack that term.
Right.
One of the freedom fighters decides to go ahead and eat the heart out of his enemy right there on the video.
I didn't see that. Wow.
Well, it's around, and it's pretty rough, and it's up there for everybody to see. So now first we see the simulations on general TV, and then you go to YouTube, and you can see the real thing.
Wow.
And the real thing doesn't look as good as what you see on, you know, on the Hollywood set, so... Let's see some more. Maybe we can make it as effective visually as it is. Oh, that's just rough, man. I don't think we need to go any farther down this rabbit hole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right, then. Is anybody else in the hip-hop or rap music business, let's call it, or creative pursuit? Let's go there.
Mm-hmm.
Are they on the same page as you, or are you out there by yourself?
No. There's a few people on the same page I am. They may deliver it, say it in a different way, deal with it in a different way, attack it in a different way, come up with different kinds of solutions, but they're on the same page. They're definitely on the same page. I'm definitely not alone.
So do you see it? Do you see being able to turn it around at least to where it's, we can at least say it's beginning to turn around? Okay, we're seeing a decrease in this self-abuse through drugs and violence and just self-deprecating behavior.
I tried to explain to church leaders and church group leaders, some politicians here in Atlanta, Georgia. I tried to whisper in their ear and hint to them, listen, I got the attention of the young people. Just support me a little and we can turn this thing around. Even if we just say one, we're doing our job. And it's
all
hard
right.
It's hard to get the support. I mean, this is why I appreciate Dean Ryan, yourself, and your staff for having me on. If just one we save from this conversation, we're doing our job. We're on the road to change and making a difference.
When somebody's hurt and they're next to you, everybody's colorblind at that moment.
Yeah.
Any soldier will tell you that's been in the stuff. There's no color there. And just between ourselves, I'm sick of it.
Yes.
I'm sick of the division. I'm not only bored with it, I'm angry about it because it continues to be fed to us. So I'm thinking that we need to have you on more often, you know, and some of the people that are trying to combat this because people are worried about everything. And, you know, I get an email every once in a while, you know, please stop feeding the fear machine. It's like, look, anybody who thinks that I or anybody who talks about these subjects are feeding a fear machine, I have a very, very short tidbit of advice for you. Fear nothing. We're all going to check out of here at one time or another. What was it Tyler Durden said in Fight Club? On a long enough timeline, the survival rate is zero. So if you know that you're going to have to check out of this reality one day, no matter how healthy you are, no matter how many bean sprouts, no matter what you do, you're going to have to leave. If you know this, then what exactly are you afraid of?
Right.
You know?
And I think that's my point of reference. I don't have the fear, so I delight in speaking up and throwing the life raft because a lot of people just don't know that they're drowning.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm liking it. Why don't we bring somebody on board? We've got a bunch of people who would like to say howdy.
Okay.
So let's take them in order. Wildcard line number one, Chris is in Ontario. Come on, talk with me and Griff.
Peace to Griff and to John D. John D., You're one of my favorite hosts, and you play some of the best music. But one of the things that you were lacking for a long time is hip hop, right? And then to hear Griff on tonight, it was just awesome. I knew when you said that it was either going to be Griff or Immortal Technique when you gave the little intro. So yeah, I just wanted to. Well, I wanted to say, too, like, me and Griff, I'm on the same page with you. I'm at MCO here in Ontario. I had a question. And then, too, you guys were talking about Syria and hip-hop, and I wrote something on that. So if I may just have a minute of time with that, that would be spectacular. But I have a question, to do first.
Yeah, let's tackle your question first.
All right. My question is, with the media controlling music, do you think, and I guess too, like, have you ever been asked, do you think they ask musicians to portray a certain message, or do you think they just give musicians the playtime who are already coming with that message, like, you know, with the violence or the...
If you've been in the music industry long enough, you know that there's buffers that are set up, and there are people that are in place at the A&R level that even before you walk in the door, they already let you know what they're looking for. And if you're not coming in to fit that particular template, then you won't get signed. And I've seen groups come in one way and change their whole style around just to fit that particular template and that particular agenda and end up getting used, album put on the shelf, and end up becoming somebody that they not themselves at the end of the day. And this happens all the time.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. Thanks for the call, Chris. Appreciate you. You know, I heard Gracie Slick. Remember her, the lead singer girl for the old Airplane and Starship and Spaceship and everything else? She made a comment one time on somebody's television show. She was being interviewed, and she said, you know, we were just kind of did what we were told. We didn't really embrace the flower power thing. We didn't really know what we were doing. We just kind of followed their direction and wrote accordingly. I didn't really believe her at the time, but I'm believing her more now after what you just said.
Yes, if you study Mae Brussels, she's also in my book, The Psychological Covert War on Hip-Hop, and there was an attack on the counterculture. They weren't drug addicts. This was a covert CIA covert operation to plant and put drugs among the 60s flower children and the peace movement.
Well, you know, breakdown of the family, basically free love and rampant, unaccountable sex, drugs, popular music, all that stuff. Popular music was banned in China for many, many years because they knew that it affects people's feelings and their attitudes. That's all part of the Communist Manifesto, all of that.
Yes. But I think a lot of times when we look at it through the lens of popular culture and music, we tend to dismiss it. Ah, that can't be true. That was then, this is now. It's a new day. We have an African-American president, excuse me, that's a Freudian slip, as president. And it can't happen to us now. And that's exactly what's happening.
You know, I'm looking at your pyramid of manipulation here on page 111. Illuminati at the top, and down there on the bottom is illegal drugs, organized crime, medicine, and the drug companies, intelligence agencies, religion, media, education, politics, military, business, and banking.
Yes. Yes.
I'm telling you, folks, I mean this. You should have this book in your library. You know, I think downloadable books are fun. I think they're fine. I think the various devices for viewing these things are good. The thing is that now with the NSA guys and gals, and by the way, good evening to those who are working third shift who are listening tonight, and I'm sure you are. I can tell by the color wheel on my computer when you're listening. A book is a good thing to hold in your hands. And once you have it, no one knows you have it. Unless, of course, they trace the sale. And who has time for that? But you need to get this book. The website is pgriff.info, pgriff.info. And you can get his book, The Psychological Covert War on Hip-Hop. But it's much, much more than strictly hip-hop. It is a rich history of an ongoing program of manipulation of you and me. However, it's not working too well here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back with Griff after this. This book is Something Else by Professor Griff, The Psychological Covert War on Hip-Hop, and you can get it at pgriff.info. I'll give you a little taste here. He's being interviewed by a fellow named Corey, and he says, so I start to watch Kanye West, Jay-Z, and the rest of them. I notice the body language, the clothing lines, the handshakes, and the language that they use. Now, you have to admit that Kanye West has really changed right before our eyes. There's no more Jesus walk, no more talk about the diamond mines and diamond trade. Videos have changed. Subliminal messages have been put in the videos and in the lyrics. Something's going on. This is not just conspiracy theory and Griff reaching. Because if that was the case, don't you think I've been brought up on a lawsuit already for slander? No one's come to me in that way because they know that if they come, they better bring the information because I have it. I have a research team that's dynamite, and we bring up information that you would not believe. And that's just scratching the surface. And then there's a little something on Theosophist Helen Keller, who back when I was a tiny little baby boy, she used to have a radio program. Helen Keller was blind, and there's been a movie made about her a long time ago and all that, and her satanic hand sign. I get emails from people from time to time upset that I would dare say that Helen Keller's I Love You sign is satanic, yet Helen Keller was an occult theosophist herself. Light in My Darkness is a book originally published in 1927 as My Religion, written by Helen Keller when she was 47 years old. The book was written as a tribute to Emanuel Swedenborg, whom Helen regarded as, quote, one of the noblest champions of true Christianity, one of the noblest champions true Christianity has ever known. This book is regarded as Helen Keller's spiritual autobiography, in which she openly declares that the teachings of Emanuel Swedenborg have been my light and a staff in my hand, and by his vision, splendid, I am attended on my way. And yet, her I love you sign is satanic. Let's take this quick break and get into that right quick with Griff on Coast to Coast AM. Stand by. Say, Griff, what happened to Kanye?
I think Kanye tasted a bit of the good life. I think Kanye took the oath. I think Kanye was brought in. And some of your callers might jump on me for saying this. I truly believe that once he realized that he was all in and couldn't get out, and mom died on the slab in L.A., but they're trying to get a breast reduction, then he found out that he's tied to these people forever. There's no getting out. I think he said he better go for it, and he better just kind of live the best life that that he could live. And I think he made a statement in a freestyle. If I can remember, I can kind of paraphrase it. He says, I know I sold my soul to the devil. I know it's a crappy deal, but it comes with a few toys and a happy meal. By his own admission, he sold his soul to the devil.
Happy meal.
Yes. He said it comes with a few toys and a happy meal. That's a hell of a thing. Just for the fame. That's not even real.
Yeah, and that's that McDonald's thing again. Yeah.
I have the quote in front of me on page 78. He says, I sold my soul to the devil. I know it's a crappy deal. At least it comes with a few toys and a happy meal.
Right, got a rhyme out of that.
And right after that, he ended up on the cover of Hip Hop Weekly. Kanye West responds to Illuminati accusations. At the same time, Lupe Fiasco went on the air and went on to say that MTV is the Illuminati's favorite network. Lupe Fiasco showed up at the inauguration of Barack Obama and performed on one of the stages in one of the concerts there, and the Secret Service snatched him off the stage.
Let me tell you something. The general public I was going to say they're not ready for what's in this book. They are ready for what's in this book. This is absolutely amazing. Say, Helen Keller is not Helen Keller. Even she cannot escape the scrutiny of Griff. Her "I love you" sign is actually a satanic sign, and she's an occult theosophist.
Her name came across the radar, and I couldn't believe it myself. And there was a few people that said, "Well, that's not demonic. That means I love you in sign language." I said, "Well, where did it come from? Let's look behind the scenes and do the research." And I think this is where, I think people attack me out of ignorance, and I do take the time and do the research, and I cross reference it and argue about it, debate it. And the facts are here. This is not a Professor Griff thing. I mean, the information is here.
There is so much that I want to get into you with, and I know it's late where you are. I'm thinking you're on the East Coast somewhere.
Yes.
I can stay up late, and you can. I'm older than you. What's up with this?
I told you that we could do a part two. I don't mind coming back. I'm trying to cover the Million Youth March in Harlem tomorrow. I'm going to need some energy for that because I got to get out there with the young people and just rub some elbows, man. I got to get out there and be in the midst of them to put my finger on the pulse of what's going on with young people.
Yeah, I know you do. And I know you'll take the proper measures to ensure that you can continue doing this because it's needed and you're needed. Let me ask you something. The Masons keep coming up. Freemasons keep coming up. As far as the elite in music are concerned, 33rd degree and above, 33rd degree is where you really cross over and get into the, you start getting handed the keys to the hidden knowledge of things.
Right.
So, and you know, most of us down here on the ground are just, yeah, the Masons, they do good work. They do, they help the community. They're good people. But there are continual references to them being involved in things that are on the sinister side a little bit. Is that your observation? Because I tell you what, I know one thing for sure. If you get to 32nd degree and you decide you don't want to go to 33rd and you quit, you're done.
Done. It's a wrap. Ball game over. And I think
no more business for you. It's done.
Yes. And I think this is what people need to understand. I knew some Masons growing up, my uncle, a couple of cousins, and I'm like, okay, you're doing good work, but you have to understand the depth of it. Myron Fagan, who gave us the history of the Illuminati, in a book written by William Guy Carr entitled Pawns in the Game, and he spelled the whole history of the Illuminati out, and he said the Illuminati infiltrated the Masonic Lodge. So you and I, we're not saying that all Masons are evil and wicked and carrying a Luciferian agenda. We're not saying that, no.
No.
No, but they use the Masonic Lodge, unbeknownst to the Masons.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the real trick, isn't it?
Yes.
Is to get people to comply, just like going back to the father of public relations. You get them to do what you want them to do, but they don't know that they're doing your bidding, but they are.
Right, unconscious manipulation. They're being controlled. They don't even realize it. And then even when you bring it up to them, they'll argue with you about it.
Well, it just comes back to a thing I've said so many times. The audience is probably bored to death with it. Hopefully not that far, but that is, if this isn't the story of the struggle of good versus evil, none of it makes any sense whatsoever. I'm looking at these things that have happened to Britney Spears, from JonBenet Ramsey in your book to Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera and all of that. It's this is really compelling stuff. And you have to, you know, as a fellow human being, you have to empathize with these people, and there has to be some feeling for the condition that they're in. They're just trying to get out there, and they have no idea what they're walking into. They have no idea the buzzsaw they're walking into.
But you know what happens? The question keeps coming up. Do these artists know Griff? Does Jay-Z know? Does Kanye West know? And I said, you know something, after all we've done and the work that we've done, being on the front lines, putting the information out there, I'm sure they're awake and they're aware, and they know what's going on. But the thing is, they can't get out.
It's too late. You're all the way in or all the way out. And once you're all the way in, you're going to stay all the way in, or you're going to be out permanently.
Exactly.
I get it. Let's go to wild card line number two. There's still some folks want to talk to you, and we invited them to talk to you, so I think it'd just be rude not to let them. That's going to be Sean in Atlanta on wild two. Come on.
Hi. First time caller, long time listener, proud member of Coast Insider, which is so much worth it for the amount of knowledge that you get. Trust me.
Well, we're going to do part two with Griff, so people become Coast Insiders, so you can review this program before you listen to part two. What's your question for Griff tonight, sir?
All right, so, first of all, I'd like to introduce myself to you, Griff, and John B. I've been listening to the show since 2004, 2005, and hip-hop actually introduced me to the idea of the Illuminati by a late great artist by the name of Tupac Shakur.
Okay.
And so at one point, I was a part of my older cousin's label, former label Hype City, now Contraband and Broken Equipment Productions. And we were so close, and I believe that at one point in my life, I would have given anything to be a part of the industry that does contribute to the destruction of our society. But I used to actually get angry at the Lord to say, why would you give me this gift and be so great to only bring me so close but to fall so short so many times? And I now know that he had something greater in mind for me.
Right.
Because I was literally destroyed my soul. And bringing it back to my question is actually two. And the person who introduced me, you know, to the Illuminati being the late, great Tupac Shakur, is there a chance that he is somewhere still in hiding? And why are we subject to constant low-mentality music, especially in the region where I'm from? It seems like you can only get famous for putting out mindless, negative music nowadays.
Right. Well,
good question. Thanks.
I've actually had conversations with members of Tupac. Family. Tupac is dead. Tupac has made his transition. I think we hear this story over and over. Bruce Lee is coming back, and this one is coming back, and this one's not really dead. And, you know, I hear this over and over and over, but it was something that Sean just said. He says, I would have done anything to be a part of the machine. You see, John B., when young people make that kind of statement, they lose themselves.
Right then,
exactly. And he said it. And this is where they lose themselves. And by the time you do the handshake and you sign on the dotted line, the ball game is over at that point. There's no coming back now, because they're going to feed every desire, every inkling of every desire they're going to feed. And they're going to there's an artist out now, Trinidad James. Just a few minutes ago, he was riding a bicycle in the hood in the projects, broke, poor, eating ramen noodles. They offered him a $2 million contract early on this year. And the kind of music that he puts out is so degrading, it's ridiculous. But you can go from being poor one day to megastardom the next, with no talent. If you look at Sean P. Diddy Combs, who doesn't even own Bad Boy, but yet you're the one with the least talent on the label, but yet you're the richest. And everyone was sacrificed on your label. Shine went to jail for 10 years. Biggie lost his life. The Locks broke up. A couple of them went to jail. Murder Mace went to Atlanta and started a church. And we can just run the whole roster down. Black Rob in jail. Craig Mack is doing something different. And the people that are listening to me know Puffy, know P. Diddy, and know exactly what I'm talking about when you talk about blood sacrifice, when you talk about staying connected to the Illuminati, if I could use that term. And this is very real in the music industry now, and a lot of people are becoming awake in a way, such as the Shawns from Atlanta, when he talks about Tupac. Tupac came out of prison after learning about the Illuminati, and he started using the term Illuminati because he wanted to kill the Illuminati. This is Tupac himself saying this.
Oh, no.
But then he
Are you telling me Tupac got topped because of that?
Oh, Tupac took the oath, of course. Yes.
Man, your words strike me like steel. They really do. This is just a little bit strong, you know what I mean?
Yes, no, I understand, and I'm well aware of what I'm saying.
I know you are.
It's in the
book. That's the scary part.
Right.
Now keep rolling.
You're talking to someone that you know, hung out with Tupac and knew Tupac. And, you know, it's very critical simply because of Tupac making the Illuminati and bringing it to the forefront and having young people understand this. I don't think it really hit young people until Tupac was dead and gone. And we did the work and we came behind Tupac and said, listen, this is what he was talking about, Illuminati. He wanted to kill the Illuminati, but yet he sacrificed his own life by signing with a label that was already in bed with them.
Man.
He even predicted and talked about his own death.
Unbelievable. All right, now we're going to have a part two, aren't we?
Yes, sir. I would love to come back.
All right, now we got about 5 minutes here, so give us your thoughts on the end game and where all this is leading to, and are there some solutions, and if there are, what are they?
The top of that question, the end game, and what are some of the solutions, where are we? There's a commercial that keeps playing in my ear every time we go to a break. They said, we're going to survive this. It's going to be a rough and rocky road, but we're going to get there. And it's very real. It's very real. We are going to get there. And many colors, many shapes, many sizes, many nationalities, many religions. We're going to be made to see the common ground, the common thread that runs through us all. And I'm already at that point. The soldiers that I roll with are from many nations, many colors, many religions. We understand one truth, though. And this is one of the solutions, by the way. We have to pull from the center. Whatever you call God, he or her, the divine intelligence to whomever, we have to pull from our core, our center, and we have to unite on those bases. Everything else will come to us. We're going to lose some battles, and we're going to lose some people, but nonetheless, we're going to get there. I don't want to sound like I'm preaching, but we're going to get there.
What can people on the ground do? What can people? You're in the industry. I'm on the side of the microphone. We're talking together. People are listening. Can you tell them what kind of action they can take?
We have to become awake and aware. We have to get the information. We have to get the information via Coast to Coast Radio or Griff's book or Alex Jones or whomever. We have to get the information because if you know better, you would do better. Well-informed artists could put pressure on management. Management could put pressure on record companies. We could change the dynamic of it if we knew better. If we knew better, we would do better. A lot of them just don't know. And time out for playing ignorant, playing dumb. Ignorance is no excuse. Silence is no excuse.
You have biblical quotes in your book, The Psychological Covert War on Hip Hop. That's a deceiving title because this is an encyclopedia of all kinds of, I mean, absolutely all kinds of things. And the quote from the King James Bible here, 1 Corinthians 10:21, you cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and of the table of devils.
Yes.
Pick a side, yeah?
You have to pick a side. I want to thank you for having me. And thank your and the people that you work with. They're very, very beautiful, nice people, very warm and welcoming people. And once again, I would love to do a part two. And I guess Dean will be in touch with you, and we can make it happen.
Let's just do that because there's so much more to talk about. It needs to be talked about, and you're part of the tip of the spear. Jones, George, Alex, everybody that's involved in this quest. Tip of the spear. Thank you very much, Professor Griff. Get his book. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. pgriff.info, The Psychological Covert War on Hip Hop. Let's take a bunch of your calls. Sorry we didn't get to everybody, but if you want to talk about some stuff, hold your position. We'll be right back. Do a little news and stuff on Coast to Coast AM.
Now, usually I don't do this, but go ahead on, break them off with a little previews of the remix. Now, I'm not trying to be rude, but hey, pretty girl, I'm feeling you. The way you do the things you do reminds me of my Lexus cool. That's why I'm all up in your grill, trying to get you to a hotel. You must be a football coach, the way you got me playing the field. So, baby, give me that and let me get you that. Running her head through my fro, bouncing on 24s. Why they stand on the radio? It's a remix to Ignition, hot and fresh out the kitchen. Mama rolling that body, got every man in here wishing. Sipping on coke and rum, I'm like, so what, I'm drunk. It's the freaking weekend, baby, I'm about to have me some fun. It's like murder, she rolled. Once I get you out the clothes, privacy's on the door. But still, they can hear you screaming, mo. Girl, I'm feeling what you're feeling. No more hoping and wishing. I'm about to take my key and stick it in the ignition. So give me that. Let me give you that. Running her head through my fro, bouncing on 24s. Why they stand on the radio? It's a remix to Ignition. Hot and fresh out the kitchen. Mama rolling that body, got every man in here wishing. Sipping on coke and rum, I'm like, so what, I'm drunk. It's the freaking weekend, baby, I'm about to have me some fun. Crystal popping in the stretch navigator. We got food everywhere, as if the party was catered. We got fellas to my left, huh?
honey's on my right. We bring them both together, we got juking all night. Then after the show, it's the
party.
Yeah, after the party, it's the
hotel lobby.
Yeah, around about four, you gotta
clear the lobby.
Yeah, then take it to your room and
somebody.
Can I get a
toot-toot?
Can I get a
beep-beep?
Running her head through my fro.
Yeah,
bouncing on 24. Come on, body tell me
ready.
It's a remix to Ignition. Hot and fresh out the kitchen. Mama rolling that body, got every man. Sipping on coke and rum. I'm like, so what? I'm drunk. It's the freaking weekend, baby. I'm about to have some fun. It's a remix to Ignition. Hot and fresh out the kitchen. Mama rolling that body, got every man in here wishing. Sipping on coke and rum. I'm like, so what? I'm drunk. It's the freaking weekend, baby. I'm about to have me some fun.
Greetings, this is Sister Rebecca, a.k.a. Holly Hood, and I wanted to do this video to just briefly talk about gay hip-hop. YouTube made me take my other video down, claiming that it had copyright infringement, and that's the excuse that they use when they feel something is too controversial and they want it removed. So I'm doing this one, and I'm going to just touch on it briefly, but you will be able to know that this is not a game, people. This is something that has been devised for a purpose, and you're going to see some of the people who are behind the actual purpose that it was devised for, and it's to emasculate young black men. Jude 7, even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh. This industry promotes the going after of abnormal sex. But what they don't realize is that those who participate are set forth an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. People, when you do things that are not of God, you suffer the eternal fire. There is nothing, I cannot think of a worse fate than burning eternally and feeling the flames of this eternal fire. But this is indeed what happens. You need to think twice about being famous. If this is your goal, and I get so many, oh my goodness, I cannot tell you how many people write me and ask me about being famous. I had to block this kid on Facebook because he kept asking me how could he contact the Illuminati. And I gave him all the knowledge that I could give, and it still didn't help. So, you know, he was determined that he wanted to be a part of the Illuminati. He doesn't realize that you can't join. They actually find you, and when they decide that you can be used, they use you. This trend, the sagging pants, was part of that agenda. In order to get the kids in the neighborhoods to follow this trend, they had to get the artists to start wearing it. However, the trend actually started in jail. So it's part of that whole monarch mind control, is because the sagging pants actually signifies jail. And people don't even realize that, you know, it's a whole circle. It's a 360. And I'm going to show you more about that later in this video, about how even states have instituted laws now that make it illegal for you to wear sagging pants. But it started in prison with the people having their belts removed, and then it became a trend in jail to signify that you were available for homosexual sex. So by having your butt exposed, you were telling the other inmates that not only were you willing and able, but you were ready. One of the people who helped to bring this fad to the industry is Jimmy Iovine, who himself is gay, and many artists who have been signed to Interscope, which is his label, have been asked to participate and have done it in gay sex with this man here, Jimmy Iovine, president of Interscope Records, Dre, Ice Cube, Eazy-E, all of these brothers have been through the Interscope camp. And Pac even said, I have it on one of my earlier videos, how Dre sleeps with men and women. Now, this brother here, he might as well not have pants on at all, because not only is he exposing his behind, he's also exposing his frontal area. So, you know, what message is that sending? And what woman would be attracted to someone dressed like this? Even young girls. I mean, this a man, a grown man, would not walk around the streets like that. T.I., who is one of the main models for this fashion, everywhere you see him in every outfit, he has his pants sagging. And he is a brother who got caught with more ammunition than you can find on a gun range. And he's free. If that was a brother in the hood, they'd still be doing time and probably be doing it for a very long time. But that only tells you that he is part of the secret agenda, because as long as you participate in the agenda and you allow yourself to be used, you will receive favor from these demons. They will protect you, and you'll have the police on your side and the FBI and the DEA, and you'll be okay for the most part, because you won't have to worry. And here's 50. You know, hip-hop is full of clowns, and 50 is part of that circus. And so here he is doing what he does, clowning with his pants all the way down, showing his underwear. And if that's not gay, I don't know what is. But this is what he's paid to do. And he's also a part of that Interscope Jimmy Iovine, Dr. Dre camp. All right. Now here's a picture of him with his hands in his pants. And, you know, I'm not in the industry anymore, but unfortunately my phone rings and my internet is full of emails with people telling me about things that continue to go on. And I have been told by reliable sources that he participates in gay sex, and a lot of them who appear so hardcore. Now that I've seen this picture with him holding this huge dildo, that's what he's holding, a huge penis on a radio station, he knows he's being photographed, he doesn't care, and he's allowing it to happen. And he's smiling. Now, what man would allow himself to be photographed holding a huge penis? And here he is holding another dildo, you know. And so what is he saying? What is the message that's being represented here? Now, here people thought he was whispering to the game, but he wasn't. He was kissing him on the cheek. And look at his eyes are closed, as in a passionate type of you know, thing. I'm not saying game is gay, but who knows? You know, a lot of these guys, you know, you can go places and you can see some of the guys who go to these gay clubs. They look very hard, and they actually go with men and women. A lot of them are bisexual. Now, this Skull and Bones crap, this was limited to, for a long time, to the white boys, but now it's in hip hop. They're wearing it on their shirts. They're representing it. This is demonic, and it's of the devil. And even in the demonic religious services, here's 50 on his album with a skull embossed over his face wearing a crown. He knows that's of the devil, but he doesn't care. He does whatever they tell him to do, you know. And a lot of these satanic religions, they actually promote homosexual and aberrant sex practices. Now, here's a product that was made that is actually testicles. It's male testicles that are things that you can hang in your car window or on your car or anywhere you want to hang it. You see the little hole at the top, that's so you can attach it somewhere. So it's celebrating the male testicle, and here somebody has it dragging in the back of their car. What is the point of this? The whole message of this, why is this popular now? Because it's all part of a homosexual agenda that's being promoted by the industry, and the government has helped sanction it. Now, I want you to look at these boys. They look like hardcore criminals, don't they? But they're not. Most of them are first-time offenders. And how did they get in their predicament? Because they were stereotyped by police based on what they were wearing. All of these young men had one thing in common. They were walking around with their pants sagging, and so they automatically became stereotyped by law enforcement. These are not hardened criminals, but by the time they get home from jail, they may very well be. So this is the message that this sends out to others. And even when you go into stores and other business establishments, there is immediately a stereotype attached to people who are dressed like this. Hip-hop is promoting an agenda that only works in hip-hop. If you're not Lil Wayne or one of these other characters who dress like this, then you're not going to receive the type of accolades that you think you deserve based on you wearing that outfit. It's not going to work in regular everyday life. You can't even work in McDonald's with your pants sagging. Nobody wants your behind over their hamburger. All right. In Flint, Michigan, they actually have a law now, and they give you guidelines for how to wear your pants and what is considered breaking the law. So the first example shows that, you know, here, your underwear exposed. That's the warning. The second one, however, is an actual law, disorderly conduct. The first one, you just receive a warning. The second one, you actually receive a DAT, which is a disappearance ticket, because it's disorderly conduct. Your underwear are exposed. And the last one, you could actually go to jail for, because it's considered indecent exposure. So you may want to consider this if you're in and around the Flint, Michigan area. And other states are now also adopting the law. Why? Because they want to lock up people who are walking around dressed like this. Nobody wants to see this. The people who are what they consider decent, law-abiding citizens don't want to see somebody's behind hanging out while they're having their breakfast or they're doing the out with their kids. A company has now made pants that actually promotes the style without showing your behind. So they still found a way to promote this madness. And if you look at these pants, they're sagging, but then they have a material covering the underwear. However, it has a band across it, and it's tighter so that it can symbolize your butt. So it's showing your behind like a woman. And the front of it actually, when you're going to see when it gets up closer, it looks like a skirt. And actually, you know, this is not only is it ugly, and it reminds me of the kind of slave one pieces that they used to wear, the jumpsuits to pick cotton, but it's also, it's tight around the hips. What man would want to wear this? But they are now wearing these metro pants, metrosexual is the style that they call it, where the pants, men are wearing very tight pants, or they're either wearing them very baggy. So this covers all areas. And again, this is indicative of prison, and, you know, prison is not the place you want to be, but unfortunately in Revelations, it speaks of some of us going there. I myself have been to prison. And, you know, the mindset that's created in there, if you allow yourself to have it happen, it can get in your head and change you and make you a product of the environment in which you have just left. Now, a lot of you remember in California, this rapper, Dala, who was shot and killed. Dala is a product of that environment that hip-hop creates. He is the brother who shot and killed him, and what they say happened is that Dala, trying to be hardcore, threatened this brother, and this brother had his gun on him. Dala didn't, and it resulted in two men being caught up in this mix. So this is part of the mindset. You know, you get these young kids who are not gangsters, but they see, you know, hip-hop gangsters, and I talk about this in my book, Hip-Hop Gangsters, promoting a gangster lifestyle, and they pretend to be something they're not, and they wind up getting killed or hurt as a result. And so now two lives are wasted, even though the brother with the dreads was acquitted. But still, Dala is gone, and he won't be back. So, you know, we need to think about this, folks. This is so not a game. All of this is part of the overall agenda, which is to poison your mind. The music industry, the wealth is drying up fast. So now they're targeting our children. And it's all part of the overall agenda, people. We need to see it for what it is. The government sanctioning gay marriage is only a small piece of it. We are becoming a society that is devoid of morals. Father God, in the name of Jesus, I want to thank you once again for the ability to make these videos. Father God, I want to thank you for the message that has been heard by those who are listening, Father God. And I also ask you to temper the spirit of those who may go against the message so that they may at least have an open mind and try to see what is going on. Because we're so close to the end, Father God, people don't know it. And we, as your prophets and scribes and people who you've, you know, designated and given the spirit to relay these messages, we know, but we have to try to make the people know, Father God, and so many of them don't want to hear this, Father God, so I ask you, in Jesus' mighty name, Father God, to just open their hearts and minds so that they don't get caught out there, because it's so not a game. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm actually going to end this with something I wrote to my sons, which are my street sons, because I don't have a son, but I just wanted to...
I've tried to reach you in every way, because there were so many things that I needed to say. But you throw your hands up.
I'm loving it, but yet you hide a vagina? You gotta look real close. Keep up with me now. Let's look into the picture instead of at it. I'm loving it is their slogan. But you hide a vagina in the ass. Everywhere you, they, I'm telling you, they operating on them lower chakras. They trying to activate them. They want to keep you thinking about having sex all damn day. And getting high and getting drunk. So by the time you hear the rap song, are you ready? You done threw a couple back, you on the dance floor, and some unknown dude is grinding on your behind. It's critical because it just feels the curves and the bottle is shaped like a woman, but you don't see the person having all sex in the ice cube. But see, this kind of stuff sits in your subconscious mind. Are you following me? And it hits you a little bit later on when you're not even thinking about it. I put it side by side so you can see it. And all you wanted to do was buy a damn soda. Are you following me?
Welcome anybody else.
Good afternoon, everyone. I want to jump right into it. I want to call my portion of the presentation intellectual insurrection. It has a little bit of a psychological twist to it because that's what I am. For those who don't know me, I see a lot of new faces, which is a good thing. I'm a school psychologist by training, a nationally certified school psychologist, and what I do in my job is I evaluate children in public school, and I decide who goes into special education. Any child who's ever been put in special ed got there because a school psychologist evaluated the child and said that they had one of 12 educational disabilities: mental retardation, autism, emotional disturbance, specific learning disability, deafness, blindness, deafness with blindness, orthopedic impairment, traumatic brain injury, other health impairment, multiple disabilities, or developmental delay. It's what I call the Sweet 12 or the Sweet 13. Depending on what state you live in, there's 12 or 13. In Pennsylvania, there's 12. The job of the school psychologist is very, very complicated because you're asked to determine whether or not this black child is struggling because they're not interested or because they can't learn. But special education is very political. To make it real simple, I give you an analogy. There's 2 million black men in prison, there's 2 million kids in special ed. Do you see the relationship? There's 2 million black men in prison, there's 2 million black kids in special education. I say that to say, parents, that you got to be very, very circumspect before you put your child in special education because it can be a high road to incarceration. By the way, there's no longer anything called a board of education in the Americas. There is no longer a board of education. You only have boards of incarceration. It's very important that you understand that. The purpose of school is to prepare children for prison for no other purpose. For no other purpose. There's 50 states in the United States of America. In each of the 50 states, the black population in prison is at least triple their population in society. In the state of Pennsylvania, blacks make up 10% of the population, but half of those in prison. In every state, we are two or three times our natural population inside the prison. It's deliberate, it's intentional, and it's systematic. And I say that to say that we have to prevent ourselves from falling into the trap of blaming the victim for their own situation. Yes, black people are the number one accomplice to white supremacy. Without a doubt, we are the number one accomplice, chiefly because we do nothing about it. Okay? But we do not spend billions of dollars to keep ourselves where we are. We did not put up the $500 million to create HIV. We didn't put up the money to create Ebola. We're not the ones building the prison. We don't create the miseducation systems. So as you can see, you are not the chief cause of your problem because you don't have the economic organization to do what's being done to you. Very important that we understand that. Now I want to deal with education first. If I'm going to deal with education, I got to deal with incarceration. The reason why you see the incarceration rates mushrooming as they are is because what? The black man and woman are no longer needed in American society. You were brought here to do what? To work, to labor on behalf of someone else. But now there is a whole group of minorities who are coming into America who are willing to do the job that you did for cheap without no complaints. Your existence in America is very peculiar. It is problematic for white supremacy. Why? Because you actually have a right to be here. You actually have a stake in this country. You built it. So that's very problematic when you want to get rid of a people. So what must you do? To get rid of those people, you have to do what? Find somebody to take their place. America will always need a free and exploitable source of labor. Because they don't want the black man and woman to no longer be the free and exploitable source of labor, they have turned now to the who? The Hispanic. And now the Hispanic is uprooting you and everything you can think of. In fact, in President Obama's last medical higher education bill, he put $2.5 billion aside for historically black colleges and universities. But for the first time in history, that money for black colleges can go to white colleges if they are trying to recruit and retain Hispanics. In case you haven't been paying attention, the entire civil rights movement that your ancestors fought, bled, and died for has been totally taken over by Hispanics and homosexuals. Now, when you deal with homosexuality, sometimes we make the mistake of dealing with it through a moral lens. Don't deal with it morally. It's not really a moral issue. Some of us deal with it through the cultural lens. Nothing wrong with that, but it's not principally a cultural issue. Some of us deal with homosexuality through a genetic lens. Okay? You can go there if you want, but there is no proof anywhere on the face of the earth that homosexuality is a natural God-given disorder. Now, let me tell you why homosexuality is here. And this relates to education. Why? Because homosexuality has now made its way into the public schools. Some of your children are reading books that have same-sex marriage couples in it, and you don't even know this because the books don't come home with the child. Okay? Now, in 1974, Secretary of State Henry Kissinger wrote a national security memorandum dealing with population control in the United States. In this population control memorandum, he recommended to President of the United States, who I believe was Richard Nixon at the time, that if you want to control the black population in America, which is growing, I suggest that we openly advocate for homosexual relationships in the black community. It is a population control strategy. It has nothing to do with God, and it has nothing to do with genetics. The reason why you see so much homosexual advocacy is it is a population control measure. And then they put the HIV into the homosexual male, and now they give it to the black woman, so now you exterminate the whole race. The problem with our community is we don't have a socialization process. We wonder why so many males become homosexual, because the homosexuals have a socialization process for your child. We wonder why so many children drop out of high school, because the school district has a socialization process for your child. They can almost predict that they're going to leave in ninth grade because they socialize them that way. The Army has a socialization process for your child. That's why once they enroll, they consider themselves Army men and Marine men until the day that they die. Even when they sleep, they have it in their mind because they're socialized to do that. You do not have a socialization apparatus in place. As a result, your children don't even belong to you. You think they do until they get a certain age, and now they belong to somebody else because there's invisible systems at play that you can't see with the naked eye. You can only see it if you put on your political shades. And most of us don't look at our political shades. We can't see it, which is why you hear black people say today that there can't be no white racism because I don't see no white people in the ghetto. But what you fail to realize is that you do not have to be present if the strength of your system is as developed enough that allows you not to be there. They control the ghetto by remote control. And they control the ghetto by who? Black elitist Negro leaders. And one of the biggest reasons why black people haven't made more progress is because you keep listening to these leaders who are members of the black elite, whose agenda is the same as your enemy. But you can't see this. An elitist Negro is no different from a European. They have the same values, they have the same interests, and none of them can stand grassroots black people. Which is why any elitist Negro leader that you see, they don't live with you, they don't struggle with you, and they don't like to be seen after dark anywhere around you. They simply tell you what to do. In fact, as Attorney Alton Maddox in New York said it best, he said that there are no Negro leaders in America, there are only Negro brokers. Their job is to broker deals between the power structure and the black masses to keep them at peace. If you don't believe me, look at any revolt that almost turned into any kind of an organized struggle. In every situation, you see what? A Negro leader being sent in by the power structure not to organize your issue and present it in the right way, but to silence you altogether. Watch them. Some ministers, but not all. Some businessmen, but not all. Some politicians. all. But the key ones, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And so what you have to ask yourself is, why are you following this person? And the interesting thing about Black America, it's impossible for you to have a leader anyway, because you're not organized. Organized groups of people choose leaders. If you notice, nobody can give white people a leader. They have an apparatus in place for that. You've never heard of someone giving the Orientals a leader. They have an apparatus in place for that. Black people are the only people on earth who you could tell them who's leading them without them actually giving their own informed consent, as we call it, in psychology. So I'm saying that to say that you got to back off and stop reacting to what's going on. And if we're going to talk about reacting to what's going on, I got to talk. Now, many of you didn't know this man 3 years ago. In fact, the first that most of us heard of him was during the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. If you go back to Hurricane Katrina, the United States government decided, and by the way, the government is nothing more than a group of men who carry out the wishes of the corporate gangster bankers. Let's be clear. Okay? That's it. The people in Washington, D.C. do nothing but carry out the orders of the international corporate conglomerate. The government is not run by votes, it's run by bucks. Very important that you understand that. But anyway, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina 2005, former President Clinton and current president at the time, Bush, were on their way down to shake hands with the victims of Hurricane Katrina. Not to do anything about it, just to shake hands. But anyway, President Obama, who was then Junior State Senator Obama, was over in Russia on some foreign relations business on behalf of the Council on Foreign Relations, the board of which his wife sits on. Now, by the way, CFR was started to rip Africa off of its resources, by the way. In fact, the CFR goes back to the 1920s. And believe it or not, its creation was actually spurred by the work of the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, who had organized black people all across the world. Okay? So that's where the CFR comes from. So if you belong to the CFR, whether you are Michelle Obama or Jesse Jackson, who's also a member, you are there to help the white power structure rape off poor black nations. Or should I say, disorganized nations, because there's really no such thing as a black nation, because what is in the soil of Africa and most other so-called third world nations makes the world go around today. If you shut down Africa's borders, white supremacy would fall overnight. So understand that we are at the center of everything that goes on in this world, whether we are in control of it or not. But anyway, they told Clinton and Bush that you got to wait till Obama comes back before you go down and shake hands with the victims. So let me ask you a question. If he wasn't chosen to be the next president of the United States, what the hell was he doing with two current presidents? They chose him before you knew him. So you got a bad habit of celebrating when there ain't nothing to celebrate about. Now, when Obama first ran for state senator of Illinois, he ran against Bobby Rush, former Black Panther from that section of the city, of that state, Chicago, Bobby Rush. Bobby Rush blew him out the water. Obama comes back again and runs again, only this time he got the backing of the National Democratic Party for a state race, which is something you tend not to see. Not only that, once he wins, he is invited to be the keynote speaker at the 2004 Democratic National Convention. Okay, you know what that is like? If I'm not mistaken, isn't Shirley Kitchen a state senator? Could you imagine her being invited by the Democratic National Convention to be the keynote speaker? Well, that's what they did with Barack Obama. Why would they take a nobody, per se, and make him the keynote speaker of something at large? Because they wanted to see the reaction of white America to him. And the reaction was phenomenal. It was astounding. And that's when they decided that we would make him what he was. But even more importantly for you to understand, the man who created the Trilateral Commission on behalf of the Rockefeller family, a European by the name of Zbigniew Brzezinski, whose books we need to get in the bookstore, The Grand Chessboard, which is one of them, which basically gave the strategy plan for 9-1-1. He said, whenever you want to control the people, you must create a serious terroristic incident. When people are afraid, they voluntarily give up their rights. Just like you do in your neighborhood because you're scared of the drug dealers, but you ain't once asked the government why they can't stop the drugs from coming in the country. But then after all, we know that the drug industry is $500 billion a year, and if you stop the drug industry, Wall Street will plummet. If you stop the drug industry, most of you who are getting ready to retire would have no money to retire on, because illegal drugs is used to supplement most major stocks on Wall Street. In fact, 2 weeks ago, BBC ran a story. The United States Marine Corps and Army was in Afghanistan 2 weeks ago, and they came into a large poppy field. And by the way, Afghanistan is the number one poppy-producing nation on the face of the earth. Opium and heroin, Afghanistan. Now you know why they're there. Ain't got nothing to do with freedom and democracy. We ain't even free and democratic here, okay? So anyway, they reported in the newspaper that the Marine Corps and the Army were forbidden by President Obama to burn up the poppy seed. So you mean to tell me you're in here fighting the enemy government who can sell this drug crop for millions of dollars to finance their war and you don't destroy it? That's because you're not in there to destroy them. You're there to oversee your drug operation. It's a book you need to read called Dark Alliance by a European reporter by the name of Gary Webb, W-E-B-B. He's the one who was murdered after he published his book because he had uncovered, okay, that the United States government, okay, was trading guns for drugs and giving Central and South American gangs free access to black neighborhoods, helping them establish networks so they could sell their dope. Drugs is a form of chemical warfare in the black community. Don't look at it as nothing else. You can't stop it because you don't control it, okay? So to beat up on young brothers who are out there selling it, even though it is wrong by what they're doing, but at the same time, we are wrong because if we had a job for our young people, they wouldn't be selling the drugs. See, they're out there selling because there's no economic system for black men. There's five stages of life for black men in America, in case you ain't been paying attention. There is miseducation. There is medication. There is incarceration. There is frustration. And then there's extermination. That's it. And every black man in here, every black man who's not in here, has the job of doing what? Trying to sidestep those five steps, but they're extremely powerful. And the reason why they're so powerful is the minute you send your child to school and he can't sit still for 5 minutes, they want some Ritalin. They want some Cycler. They want some Prozac. They want some Adderall. They want some Paxil. And they're giving you this, and you're giving it to your babies because somebody told you that a simple little family problem that can be solved with discipline is now a psychiatric issue with a brain-based neurological cause. But when they diagnose your child with the disorder, nobody ran a CAT scan or an MRI. It's about pimping because they make $32 billion a year off these black children who are being given these drugs. $32 billion a year. And nobody's even telling you about the side effects. Nobody's telling you that the drug messes with your son's ability to produce healthy semen in his testicles. Did anybody tell you that? And that's coming straight from the Food and Drug Administration. But wait a minute, you can't rely on the Food and Drug Administration to approve your medicine. Why? Because most of the high-ranking staff in the FDA have stock invested in the drug companies, most of which publicly trade on Wall Street. So the reason why your son is pumping dangerous drugs in his body is because somebody's stocks need to go up. So you got to look at the situation for what it is, black people. You got to turn off the TV and start reading a little bit more. And you got to make sure you grab those children and pull them tight and close to you, because right now with what the homosexual movement is doing, it's off the hook. I was at Historically Black College not too long ago, and I saw two cross-dressed brothers walk into the room where I was. Thoroughly cross-dressed, blouses, high heels, fishnet stockings at a Historically Black College and University. In fact, it's going on at most of the Historically Black Colleges and Universities. The homosexual movement has taken over the civil rights movement. But believe it or not, the homosexual movement and the civil rights movement have a little relationship. When we go back to Dr. King and the civil rights movement, we find that his top advisor at the time was an openly professed homosexual male by the name of Bayard Rustin. Y'all know who I'm talking about. In fact, Dr. King was forced to stop working with Bayard Rustin because everybody else in the civil rights movement said that this don't look right, because back then, black people stood for a little bit more. So a black minister had no problem standing up saying that I'm not for homosexuality. You'd be hard-pressed to find one today. And the reason why you'd be hard-pressed to find one today is because George Bush, the last president, came up with a bright idea. He said if the black church is the backbone of the black community, if we start giving them money, can we soften their position? And somebody said, yes, master. So he found a way to get past the constitutional provision of a separation of church and state. And so now you got black churches all across America, including in the city, who get money directly from Washington. They are the new FBI, Faith-Based Initiative. Very important that you watch this. In fact, I know for a fact that the FBI in every major city, you should know this, has two lists. They have a list of radicals. I'm probably on there. Some of you on there, okay? Then they got another list. These are resources. These are the leaders who they can go to and find out exactly what's going on here tonight. These are the people who can they can go to and ask to keep a tab on him. What is he up to? What is he doing? And you know most of those lists are comprised of ministers? That's right, religious leaders. See, when somebody told you that we just deal with God, we don't deal with nothing else, that was a political decision, because there is nothing more political in this world than how you form your concept of the all-powerful creator. In fact, the white Jesus concept, okay, is a phenomenon that you only find in the black community, in that we are the only race of people who will voluntarily worship our creator in an image of somebody else's creation. You can't find it. You go to the Orient, Jesus looks like them. You go to the Middle East, Jesus looks like them. You go to white countries, Jesus looks like them. But when you go to certain Roman Catholic cathedrals, Jesus looks like us. Like if you go to the Vatican, if you go to the Catholic Cathedral in Poland, in Spain, in Ireland. Most of them have black Madonnas and child to this day in the main cathedral. But the reason why there's a white image of a white Jesus in your church is because the mind works by symbols. And if I make your God look like me, then naturally your unconscious mind will associate me and George Bush and every other white man who's come across as being God Almighty. So when you think you're on your knees praying to God, you're really worshiping the white man, and you wonder why your prayers don't get answered. Making African children inferior begins with birth. I say it all the time. So when your child come home, what do you turn on the TV? White racist cartoon. Everybody remember the Tasmanian devil? The little ugly fat thing that just kept spinning around? Do you know why that cartoon was created? Because at the time, the British was in Australia, okay? And there's an island off the coast of Australia, Tasmania. They exterminated every living black man, woman, and child on the island of Tasmania, so they gave you the Tasmanian. Remember this. You cannot exterminate a people until you first exterminate their image in the mind of everybody else. Look at Hitler in Nazi Germany. Before he could attack the Jews, he had to do what? First have a propaganda campaign that made the Jews worthless in the eyes of everybody else. And that's what we fail to realize. It is only after you have been made a demon in the eyes of everybody else can you then be exterminated. But the interesting thing about Nazi Germany is that there was a population of 50,000 Africans who lived there and went through the same hell, and you don't find them memorialized at no Holocaust conference. Why you don't see no pictures of black people at a Holocaust conference? In fact, do you know that it was a group of black soldiers called the Liberators who liberated the European Jews from some of the worst concentration camps that there are? And to this day in Germany, European Jews have an annual celebration celebrating the black soldiers who saved them from Hitler. One thing you got to understand about movies and motion pictures is there's nothing entertaining about it. It's all political. Do you know that there is an office, a committee in the United States Congress that must approve every movie that comes across the movie theater? Why you think you never seen a real movie on the Nat Turner insurrection? Why you think you never seen a real movie on the Garvey movement? Why you think you never seen a real movie on the slave trade? It's not allowed. Why? Because images can wake you up just like they was used to put you to sleep. And that's why when you see black movie producers, if you notice, they're not allowed to do any serious movies either. Or they keep showing you the same hood movie time and time again. Right now, we got a popular comedy out in the movies right now. A bunch of black men acting like fools over the death of their father. And to you, you think it has no image. But when a white person goes to the movie and they watch that, what do you think goes across their mind? They believe that this is what you are. I remember when I was at Millersville University, white boy smacked a black girl in her behind. He was joking around. When he got sent to the dean's office, the dean asked him, why did you do that? He said, I thought that's what they like because that's all I see on television. Images rule the world. Images rule the world. I can sit up here and tell you Jesus is black all day, but if we put a million pictures of a white Christ up here, that's exactly what your brain is going to grab onto, because the brain is the creature of repetition. And that's why you got to make sure you do not raise your black children to believe that they have a choice as to whether or not they want to be a man or a woman. Tell them it ain't no choices in this house. You got to stand for something, because some of us are confused. The civil rights people got you thinking that you are being a hypocrite of the civil rights movement if you do not stand for diversity in sexual behavior. I got an email the other day. Somebody wanted me to come and speak and facilitate a discussion on sexual diversity. There was gays, lesbians, transgendered, transsexual, metrosexual. Every type of sex was out there. Half of them I never heard of before. Okay? So you got to be careful. You got men out there taking hormones, becoming women. You got women out there taking hormones, becoming men. I know, because in my graduate program, we had a class on diversity. They didn't talk about race. You know what they talked about? Homosexuality and lesbians. They've taken over the whole movement. And I'm saying that to say this. You got to stop trying to blend your struggle in with everybody else. Black people got a bad habit of trying to hold hands with every other person on earth who got some color in their skin. And what you fail to realize is all these other people who got color in their skin don't care anything about you. You're quick. The Native Americans. I'm half Indian. So the hell what? I bet you they won't claim you. I'm half Hispanic. So the hell what? I bet you they won't claim you. My grandmother was a Japanese. So the hell what? If she was so Japanese, why are you buying her hair? Shouldn't you be growing it? Understand this. If a white person found out that his grandfather was black, you would never know. If a Japanese found out that his grandmother was black, you would never know. But let a black person find out that they got anything of anybody else in them, and you walk into their house, and their whole house is a flag of that other race, even though they want nothing to do with it. I know, because when I was in college, I had some friends of mine who had a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and you walk into their room, and you would think they was 100% Turkish or 100%
Irish or 100% Russian. Don't look nothing like them. You look like poor Negro to me. But you want to be something else. But anyway, here's the issue with Obama. And this is the one piece that you got to grab your mind around. And I don't know why I keep seeing Barack Obama's face on posters with Dr. King and Malcolm X, and most disrespectfully, the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, who would probably spit in the man's face. Okay? And that's why people who do art, if we got any artists in here, you got to be a conscious artist. Okay? You got to stop making pictures that are big lies. Okay? Garvey facing Obama, that's a lie. King on the shirt with Obama, that's a lie. Why is it a lie? Because Dr. King was for reparations. Read his speeches. Obama is against it. Dr. King is for civil rights and affirmative action. Obama is against it. Not only is Obama against that, he also said that he's not even interested in an apology for slavery. Barack Obama, your president. But guess what? It's our fault. Because everybody who voted for President Obama, we are the only group 40 million strong and shrinking, 40 million strong, who did not meet with the man before you pledged your vote. You got a bad habit of doing that. You want to know why the Hispanics got a Supreme Court justice out of Obama? Because they met with him first. You know why the homosexuals are getting everything that they want? Because they met with him first. The police met with him first. The unions met with him first. You didn't meet with him. You said his father was African. I said, well, he never knew him, but we don't care. He's half black. Let's vote. Somebody manipulated your consciousness, and you ran out and voted for the man. And I'm not saying you did anything wrong, because you know you don't choose the president any damn way. The Electoral College chooses the president of the United States. See, that night that Barack Obama won, I was looking at the popular vote ticker. And on the popular vote ticker, he only beat McCain by 3 million votes. You know what that means? He only beat him by one small state. And that's why you wonder why he gets so much hate mail. People say, well, wait a minute, how he get so much hate mail? He won in a landslide. No, he won the Electoral College vote in a landslide. The people he won by one state. But here's my issue. You ain't going to catch hell under Obama. You're going to catch more hell when he's no longer in office. Let me tell you why. You have went on record, us, the Negro people, have went on record as saying what? No matter what that man does not do for me, he can ignore police brutality, he can ignore miseducation, he can ignore the over-incarceration of black men, and he's still my man. So let me ask you a question. 8 years from now, when Obama is no longer president of the United States, and Jim Brown the cracker is in the White House, and you go send the man with the perm up there, what's his name? You send Al Sharpton up there to go and debate for you. You know what that new president going to tell you? Get out my damn face. You just had a Negro in office for 8 years and let him do whatever he wanted to. You never hold him accountable one time. So how you think you're just going to start holding white presidents accountable, but the black presidents get to ignore you? I'll never do another thing for you for the rest of my life. I'm telling you, by letting Obama slide for a decade, you let every white president slide for the rest of eternity. And it's after Obama that you're going to see black folks catch hell like you ain't never caught before, because you let somebody manipulate your consciousness. And by manipulating your consciousness, they was also able to manipulate your loyalty. And another thing, I got to give a shout out to Black and Nobel. I know they got a diverse array of books up here. We got, you know, the soft porn up here. But they still got the conscious stuff in the back. No, I'm going to tell you why I'm saying that. Because when you go to certain bookstores, particularly those that's owned by Europeans, you will find that the conscious black literature section has all but disappeared. Has all but disappeared. In fact, I was in one not too long ago, and guess what? I walked in, I said, well, where's the serious black literature? And they said, we don't sell that too much no more. And I said, well, why not? And they said, because y'all don't want to read that. I said, well, where is it? He said, you go upstairs all the way to the back, all the way to the back, and it's on the left-hand side. The black literature section is about this big. The blaxploitation section is as big as Walmart. See that? And here's the situation. Your young children, you got to watch what they read, because reading is access to the unconscious mind. I keep telling people that. The images and messages that are in written print can be sucked up by the unconscious, and the next thing you know, your child is living off the images that they got in the book or off the television. In fact, most of us should get rid of the TVs in our house. We don't even really need them. There's no benefit to it. In fact, I was at a lecture the other day. Some parents got mad at me. I said, I wouldn't be mad if every high school in America shut down the football and the basketball team for 25 years. And they said, well, why would you want to do that? I said, well, the number one reason is the only person who benefits from black men being in the NFL and the NBA is middle-class white women. Am I wrong? And then they said, well, why is it that somebody said, well, the reason why the black men like the white women is they just happen to be the ones who are there. I said, that's a damn lie, because when they was growing up dead, broken, poor in the neighborhood, there was nothing but black women around them then, but they didn't grab one of them sisters. But you know why? Because the NBA has a socialization process for the athletes. I know, because I know some athletes in the NFL and the NBA, they tell me, do you know soon when you sign your contract, there's a mandatory private orientation. They tell you who to hang with, where you better not go back to. They dissuade you from going back into your neighborhood to help out. They dissuade you from being around certain types of black women. They literally are told you don't want to date a woman who got twists in her hair. It's bad for your public relations career. It's bad for endorsements. They are socialized to marry outside their race. But you know what's so sad about it? If they got broke today or tomorrow, not one of them women will be standing next to them. When I was an undergrad, I did a research study on interracial relationships. And you know what I found? 95% of the relationships between black and white are poor white women and rich black men. You see that? So my question to you is really simple. If it's all about love, if it's about love, why haven't we never found a rich white woman married? If it's all about love. You see that? And another thing, black folks, we got to make sure. We got to make sure that we do not allow somebody to make us feel like we are being a bad human being by criticizing certain types of behaviors that are not in the best interest of African people. It ain't nothing personal. I ain't got nothing personal against Charles Barkley and Sidney Poitier. I ain't got nothing personal against Tiger Woods and James Earl Ray and Tay Diggs and Cuba Gooding Jr. and Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant, and I'll probably be here at 5 o'clock in the morning. I ain't got nothing personal against none of them. But the bottom line is women live longer than men, so if a rich black man marries a poor white woman, when he dies, she now inherits his millions. This is about business. It ain't about love. And the big situation is a lot of our young brothers think when they sleeping with the white woman, they getting over. I'm getting her back for what they did to my aunt. No, you ain't, your dummy, because every time you go into that cave of hers, guess what? You come out more mixed up than the last time you went in there. You cannot lay down with somebody cohabitate and not pick up their energy. So when you lay down with her, you're picking up her energy. You might have thought you was a strong black man, but after hitting that 25 times, guess what? You are as European as any other European male. It distorts consciousness. It distorts consciousness. And I'm going to tell you something from a psychotherapy standpoint. No child suffers more than a biracial black child. If you don't believe me, read Obama's own words in his own autobiographies. Read what that man tell you. I knew I had friends who was biracial. They never quite fit. White folks don't want them, period. And some of us, because we into the whole light-skinned supremacy movement, we don't want to take them either. And by the way, we do have light-skinned supremacy in the black community. You do know that, right? Yes, we have light-skinned supremacy. I know black nationalists who are light-skinned supremacists. I know black leaders who are light-skinned supremacists. You'll never catch a sister with color around them, and they never get called on it. Some of y'all, when the babies come out to this very day, you know what you're doing? You're looking at their ears to see how dark they're going to be in 10 years. You're supposed to be celebrating African life, but the slave in you demands to know what is going to be ultimate complexion of this child. Some of you tell your kids don't bring anything home darker than a certain complexion. And just like you got light skin supremacy, you got black skin supremacy. I know some brothers and sisters, they blue, black, purple, and anything lighter than them is inferior to them. That's right. So the light skin kids get beat up and picked on in some places, and then the dark skin kids get beat up and picked on in other places. And what I'm saying is we got to realize none of us are responsible for how we got here, no matter how dark or how light. See, when you judge black people, you don't judge black people based on skin color. You judge every black person by five things, whether it's me, whether it's the leaders on TV, whether it's the person sitting next to you, whether it's your schoolmate. You judge them based on consciousness, courage, commitment, consistency, and creativity. Consciousness, courage, commitment, consistency, and creativity. For example, my black scholars who are working at the white colleges, but they love Africa so much, but all their kids go to white private schools, y'all know who I'm talking about. Y'all know who I'm talking about because y'all bring them to Philly four, five, six, seven times a year and never ask them no serious questions. Live in white neighborhoods, kids go to white schools, but they in love with you. Yeah, the hell right. So you got to understand the difference between somebody who's struggling and somebody who's pimping. Because in case you ain't picked it up, black leadership is a very profitable business. I'm surprised they don't trade it on Wall Street, black leadership stock. Tell me I'm wrong. Right now, we got a situation where most of your national black leaders have gotten quiet on the Obama question. It's a war going on, in case you ain't noticed. And they all bourgeois fighting, so I don't want you to get too involved in the war, because even though I agree with Tavis and Dyson, they still elitist blacks. They're not coming in the hood to help you or. But their position is accurate, which is that President Obama has taken care of everybody but blacks, and it's time for him to look at us. But you got other people on the other aisle, I ain't going to say their names because y'all in love with them people, who say Obama basically ain't got to do nothing for black people. Okay, he won, and that should be enough. What's wrong with that argument? We're not fighting a personality. We are fighting global white supremacy. It is a system. Do you understand? So whether I'm in charge or whether he's in charge, you must fight the system, because it ain't about the face you see. It's about the mechanical order behind it. And we've forgotten that. And we've forgotten that. And we've forgotten that. And let me go on to Africa for a moment. Some of us think that they don't want us in Africa. I've been to Africa 3 times, 5, 6 countries. I've never ran into that yet. I'm going to tell you what they don't want in Africa. They don't want somebody with internalized racism going over there making more internalized racists. That's what they don't want in Africa. If you're going to go, leave your basketballs here. They don't need them. Ladies, no disrespect, leave everything you got from Hing Ching Wong at your house. Don't bring it on the airport. They don't need that either. Because when I was in Johannesburg, South Africa, walking around in the hood, you know what I saw? I saw black sisters in these wooden-made perm factories burning their skin, making a homemade lie, trying to look like you. I'm telling you what I saw with my own eyes. See, what black people have not grasped in America, you are the leaders of Africans around the globe culturally and financially. You gross $850 billion a year. You are the richest group of blacks on the face of the earth. There is no group of blacks who makes more money than the Negro in America. In fact, there's only 9 groups of people with more richness than you on earth. So there's only 9 groups of people who make more money than black Americans, Negro Americans, ex-slaves, whatever you want to call, because I don't know what an African American is. There's a hyphen in there. What's the hyphen going on? I think W.E.B. Du Bois said it best. I respect him a lot. He was a hater, though. He hated on Marcus Garvey and helped destroy the movement. Okay, but you got to look at the good and the bad in everybody. So I celebrate Du Bois' good, and at the same time, when I teach young black children, I got to teach him that he was a very, very jealous, Eurocentric man, and he wanted to destroy Marcus Garvey because Marcus Garvey didn't have a Howard degree. Excuse me, Harvard. So he wanted to know how this English-speaking Jamaican without a college degree comes to America and take over my leadership. Booker T. Washington had just died. So Du Bois said, I am the heir apparent. I'm supposed to be the next great leader, but here comes Mr. Garvey, some short, fat man from Jamaica, and it just organizes 15 million people like that. So it brought the jealousy. But my point is, getting back to Africa, is that we have to have something to give to Africa. With $850 billion, do you know if we were organized, no African nation would ever have to go in debt to the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund? Do you know that? Do you know that? No African nation would ever have to borrow another dollar from the United States government if blacks in America were organized, but we are not organized. That is our problem. Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, he was a socialist, I'm a nationalist, but he was correct. And Mr. Garvey was correct when he said the number one enemy or the number one weapon used against the Negro is disorganization. The only organization we have in our community is the church and the mosque. And guess what? That's not going to get it done. And the reason why it's not going to get it done, because the Orthodox Christian and the Orthodox Muslim are more alike than they are separate, because neither one of them wants anything to do with black consciousness. And I can say that because I was raised Muslim, and I challenge any Muslim on that. Orthodox. We don't want nothing to do with it. Islam is for everybody. You're right. Islam is for everybody. But the last time I checked, when you make Hajj and you go to the Middle East, they call you Abd and Kafir like they do every other black mind, long beard or not. Don't let religion confuse you to your race. African people are the only people who are asked every day, are you loyal to who you are or are you loyal to what you believe? The question for me is real simple. If God made me first and made me black, obviously being loyal to blackness is being loyal to God at the same time. I'm not choosing either or. They are one and the same for me. And that's where we mess up. And that's where we mess up. Remember, anything you drop into a self-hating people will be used for self-hate. And if you don't give them anything, they will make up stuff. North Philly versus West Philly. William Penn versus Ben Franklin. But wait a minute. Y'all don't do no damn homework, and they don't do no damn homework. So how the name you want to fight in the name of the school? That's what Negroes do. That's what we do. And then we got a situation where all of our young people are self-medicating on marijuana, but ain't nobody telling them that they spraying the drugs that they bring to the hood. They spraying them. I want our young people to know, if you keep on getting blunted like that, and we know who's smoking the blunt because your fingertips look like you've been playing the piano all day. And it's funny, too, because I do psychological evaluations for a living, right? So soon they come in and sit at my, I'm looking at the fingertips. And you know when you're blunt, I see him laughing in the back. Yeah, I know. I know when you blunt it because when you blunt it, you move in slow motion all day, okay? But ain't nobody telling you that when you grow up, young man, and you want to get a, you know, have your wife and y'all want to have a child, okay, you won't be able to give her what she needs to bring you that baby, okay, because it messes with the sperm. Just like you're going slow motion, they be going in slow motion, and they never get the way they're supposed to be. So you got to slow that down. Now, speaking of spraying chemicals, let's talk about HIV for a moment. It's the number one killer of black women 18 to 38. Now, right now, the United States government, the official line, is that AIDS was created. Listen to me now. This is official. This is from the government. AIDS was created because a monkey in Africa, Congo, had sex with a woman. If you don't believe me, look it up. Type in the origin of AIDS according to the U.S. government. They said that the monkey had the virus and gave it to a woman. They said, we're not going to say that the woman cohabitated with the monkey, but somehow the virus jumped from the monkey. Then Ebola came out, and Ebola worse than AIDS because, you know, Ebola liquefies your internal organs. They literally turn into liquid, and they start oozing out of every edifice in your body. Guess what? Ebola comes from the Congo, too, another type of monkey. Okay? Now I got a question for you. Why the Congo? The Congo is the richest piece of real estate on the face of the earth. Do you know that there's more diamonds, gold, coltan, oil, you name it, in the Congo than any other nation on the face of the earth? In fact, we all got a cell phone right now, laptop at home, car outside, which you probably wouldn't have if it wasn't for a mineral called coltan. Cobalt and titanium, they bring them together, it makes coltan. You cannot have an electromagnetic communication device without it. The reason why the monkey had to come from the Congo is so you would never think about going to the Congo so nobody sees what the hell they're doing over there. Do you know that they're actually fomenting the wars that's going on between the gangs? Arming this one, arming that one, giving them pennies while they run away with all the minerals. Why do you think they assassinated Patrice Lumumba back then, who in my opinion was the strongest of all the Pan-Africanists, okay? Because Lumumba said, you ain't going to steal from our country no more. If you want it, you're going to pay for it. So the CIA director, Alan Dulles, Eisenhower, and the rest of them got with the government of Belgium and said, you know what? Get him out of here. They took that brother, two of his comrades, and sliced their body up into little titty pieces and put them in acid, and the only thing that survived was the teeth and a piece of his skull. And a couple years ago on BBC News, they did an interview with some of the Belgian officers who were there during the assassination of Patrice Lumumba, and one of the officers reached into his pocket, pulled out a napkin, and guess what he unrolled? He still had Patrice Lumumba's teeth. Ain't never did a day of jail in time, and he was laughing about it. Look at what they do to us, and then they laugh about it. But at the same time, young men, don't be so quick to run out there and fight because we good for that. I had one brother say, well, you know what, why don't we just start bombing cop calls? You silly Negro. First of all, they can see everything you do. And by the way, in case you don't know about the Telecommunications Act, every text message, every voice message, every email message, every phone message goes into a central repository. It is never destroyed or deleted ever. Okay? Did everybody hear me? There is no privacy in America. That was one of the first things they undone, and the latest Telecommunications Act came under President Bill Clinton. He did that. There is no privacy anymore. You are already being screened. You got, I don't want nobody in my business. Your business, hell, is they business. You don't have no business. What business? Chicken wings, shrimp bag foo young? What business do you own? Because you ain't got a supermarket. You ain't got a private school. You ain't got an airplane or a submarine. By the way, Bob Johnson, who sold BET to Viacom for $2 billion, actually wanted to start the first black international airplane business because he saw how much money black people spend in the travel industry. And you know what they said? They said, nigga, hit a basketball, you better get out my face and give him the Charlotte Bobcat. That's right. That's right. Bill Cosby been trying to get a major network since the beginning of time. And I take issues with Bill, don't get me wrong. Okay, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, it was a black man who was trying to buy a major network. They sent him somewhere else. See, there's certain industries that are not open to black folks unless they organize. How is it that Michael Jordan is the first former NBA player to become a majority owner of an NBA team? And the NFL still ain't had a black owner yet. See, what we started to realize, my brothers who like running with the Eagles flags in your car, when you run around with that Eagles flag, you don't even know that you're supporting white supremacy. See, the Philadelphia Eagles is a corporation. The Philadelphia Phillies is a corporation. They buy, they trade, they sell, they exploit internationally. It's a white corporation. And we got a bad habit of doing that. It's amazing, too, because you'll see Irish people will have the Irish flag, Italian people have the Italian flag, and a Negro will have an Eagles flag and a Sixers flag on the other side of the window with some dark-ass glasses on, thinking he's doing something. So we got to wake up. First of all, what we got to do, we got to start pooling that money together. You know why black folks don't own anything? Because we don't trust each other. We don't trust each other without money. Now you want to put a dollar bill in this? I get his brother a dollar. I'll be calling him every 5 minutes to make sure he ain't spent my damn dollar. Am I wrong? Am I wrong? You know why the Orientals get a head up on you? They get off the boat. 20 families will shack up in one house and won't nobody leave the house till everybody in the family got their own business. Do you know that? It's what the Indians do because everybody has a do-for-self collective mentality except the black man. And guess what? This is good because we need the education. But then it's got to be transformed into action. Because guess what? We have lectured ourselves into extermination. It is time for action. But the problem is, the truth of the matter is, most of us are not ready for that action. And so, guess what? Everybody else uses it except us. Except us. So where do I think black people are going to be at ultimately in the next 100 years? We're in the 21st century. Where do I think we're going to be in the 22nd? This is what I think. I don't think there's going to be a single African-American left in the next century. I think you're going to be replaced with African immigrants from Africa. Why them? Number one, they need our intellectual genius. We have it. The immigrant Africans have it. They need it. Okay? That's number one. Number two, they got to find a way to get rid of you because they owe you too much. See, when you owe somebody too much, simplest thing that they do is do what? Gangsters? They get rid of them. So these 40 million black people, we got to get rid of them. The reason why you got so many prisons, people, ain't because you're committing crimes. The reason why you have so many prisons is because they're trying to get you out of the population as whole. That's why. And by the way, for my Pennsylvania parents, in case you ain't heard the news, there's a new law, the Keystone Exam Law. I did 3 lectures on this, but I'm going to give it to you real brief. This is the latest plot. Beginning in 2015 in the state of Pennsylvania, and this applies to any child you have from 7th grade or younger. Beginning in 2015, state of Pennsylvania, there's going to be 10 tests called the Keystone Exam. Your child cannot fail more than 4. You must pass 6. If you fail more than 4, you do not get a high school diploma in this state. That's all 67 counties. That's all 501 school districts. And if you think I'm making this up, go to the Pennsylvania Department website. There's already 25 states who have this test. And guess what? States that have the mandatory graduation exams that have some of the highest incarceration rates in the country. Pennsylvania is building 4 new maximum security prisons right now. Do you want to know why? Because they know your kids ain't going to pass that test. How do they know your kids ain't going to pass that test? Because you don't socialize them to pass that test. I mean, let's think about it. A black child is born, they run around the house for 5 years. They go to kindergarten, might know how to spell the first 2 letters of their name. But by the time they get to the 5th grade, they can't even read, but they got Xbox, all the latest sneakers, all the latest Christmas gifts at home. You are your child's problem, not the teacher. And you're hearing this from a psychologist. I argue with parents. I don't care. I'm going to say, let me tell you something. Your son should have knew how to write his name before he got to my test step. If you know your son can't read, why you ain't working with him at home, parent? If you know your daughter can't do math, why you ain't working with her at home? Do you know that if they don't get that high school diploma, they're going to get a certificate of completion, and they will be shut out of any life activity whatsoever? They won't even be able to go into the military, even though I don't think no black child should be going into the military because they're the first to die. They put them right on the front line. We was about 70% of the ground troops in the Iraq war back in the 90s. Furthermore, being a black person in the military is damn near being like a black person in the FBI, the CIA. By the way, do you know that it was undercover snipers from the U.S. Army that shot Dr. King? And it was the Ku Klux Klan who told them where Dr. King was. So believe it or not, the white secret hate groups worked with the government. Remember, it was the U.S. government that told Lucky Luciano, as long as he could get these drugs in the hood, we'll pardon you, you'll get out of jail early. Okay? So they all work together. White supremacy is white supremacy. Illegal and legal. The bottom line is they got one goal in mind, the extermination of all African people, period. At least in America. At least in America. But they're working on Africa because even though there's 800 million people in Africa, at the rate of AIDS, They say that there might not be a black person on the continent by 2052. That's your lifetime. Could you imagine going to Africa with no black people? That's what they're trying to do, because even though you hate Africa, they love Africa. They love it. They're always there. When I was on the airplane in Nigeria, I thought I was on my way to Tokyo. The whole airplane was Oriental. And you know what they're doing in Nigeria? They are buying up the industry just like they do right outside your house. In Nigeria, they own all the chicken farms. They own all the turkey farms. They own half the fast food restaurants. Nigeria and certain states in Nigeria look just like North Philly. And guess what? When they go to Africa, they catch malaria, but they still keep on coming back. See that? You got aliens coming and taking over your native land because you don't want nothing to do with it. Talking about you ain't left nothing in Africa. The worst thing you can do is cut yourself off from your life vein, because as Africa goes, you go. The reason why you get disrespected in America is because the black man in Africa gets no respect. Do you really think that you can set yourself up as a nation apart? In fact, that's what the Hispanics are doing. Because remember, up until 1970, there was no such thing as a Hispanic. There was Africans who spoke Spanish and Africans who spoke English. But because they knew that the Africans who spoke Spanish, many of them didn't want to accept the fact that they were African, they gave them a name for themselves and called it Hispanic. So when they talk about the Hispanics about to surpass the blacks, you got to ask, what is the definition of it? Because a lot of the people you're talking about are blacker than me in my mouth. You understand? They are using names and titles to separate people. Now, Haiti. Let's talk about this Haiti nonsense. Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela, on CNN, a few days after the hurricane, said that the United States Army Corps of Engineers was testing atomic weapons on the ocean floor by Haiti. And it was the atomic weapons that caused the earthquake. Not nothing natural. You want to know why Hugo Chavez knows that? The earthquake wasn't even meant for Haiti. It was meant for Venezuela. But they missed the mark. And if you notice, if in three or four other Central American nations been hit, because they can't quite get it right, but they're doing it to smash him. Oh, they did hit him? Okay, so they did hit him. I didn't even know that. You see this? He has perfected the art of using nature against you. And you know what's so suave about it? You never know for sure whether it was nature or him. That's what he did in Hurricane Katrina, which was so sad. I was down there last summer. Okay, they ain't fixed nothing up in the Ninth Ward. Half the black people wasn't allowed to go back home. But the rich white folks was allowed to come in and rebuild. Do you want to know why they moved everybody out of the Ninth Ward? Why did they flush the brothers and sisters out? Because a few weeks prior, you know how they do the oil taps? They go, they found oil under the projects. Yes, they found oil under the ground with all these poor black people, and they said, how are we going to let them get out of here and not know we got this? Somebody said, wash their asses out. And that's exactly what they did. For oil, good people. For oil. And last week, what President Obama said, he's going to give the okay to start doing off-draw oiling again. Okay? Everything is political. Everything is connected. Stop giving your enemy the benefit of the doubt. And one thing we got to agree to disagree on is this. Whatever your relationship with Europeans is your business. But when it comes to the business of organizing African people, what we do is none of their damn business. Some of y'all ain't realized that yet. You're the only people who will tell your intimate business to other people. Okay? Take a Korean businessman and another Korean businessman. They may respect each other as Koreans, but when it comes to selling them sneakers to your kids, they're not going to tell where he getting his price from and where he getting his price from. Black folks got to do the same thing. We don't believe in racial hatred. That's not who we are. But I don't have to be an integrated fool not to believe in racial hatred. And some of y'all, your religious views have clouded your mind so much that you can't even come to an all-black meeting without feeling like you're sinning against God. And I told you to tell me when it's 15 minutes left. Anyway, don't be hitting me in the back, Tyson. Anyway, I'm going to wrap this up. And I'm going to wrap it up with this. I'm a pan-African. I come in the tradition of the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, greatest black leader of the 20th century, only black leader to ever organize 15 million Africans. He organized more Africans than every organization you can think of put together since the end of slavery. Not only did he do that, he gave us the red, black, and green flag. He laid down a strategic map work that led to the freedom of all of the African world. Kwame Nkrumah, who led Ghana to independence in 1957, and he has a black star on that flag, said that of every book he read, including the Communist Manifesto, And Du Bois is working. Remember, Du Bois lived his last years in Ghana. He said the most significant and impactful book that he ever read was The Philosophy and the Opinions of the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey. Y'all got any copies in there? Handle that. Now, Garveyism. I'm taking with you. Garveyism is seven quick steps. Number one, your God better look like you if he has an image. If he ain't got an image, so be it. But you know what I find? A lot of us think our God don't have an image, but he does. Like a lot of our grandmoms. God ain't got no color, but when you go in his house, you still see who painted the Last Supper? Michelangelo's uncle up in there. Because you do know that the Last Supper was his uncle and 12 crooks that he got from the prison. If you don't believe me, read his history. That's right. That painting on your wall is nothing but inmates from the local jail. That's like going down to Pick and CFC of taking a mold shot and hanging it up on your kitchen wall. Okay? So tell grandmama that. Okay? All right? But number one, your God, if you're going to have one, better look like you. And believe it or not, that didn't even start with Marcus Garvey. You know who started that first? A black man by the name of Bishop Henry McNeil Turner. He was one of the grandfathers of Pan-Africanism. He was the first black chaplain general in the U.S. Army, and he was the one who was elected to the, I think it was South Carolina, North Carolina legislature, and he called the red, white, and blue flag a dirty rag in front of the white Congress people before slavery ended. Bishop Henry McNeil Turner. So your God better look like you. Number two, African identity. Identify with who you are. I know there's a lot of different theories over there on the word Africa, but I'm going to take my knowledge from the greatest African scholar warriors, being Sheikh Anajot, Ivan Van Sertima, Dr. Ben, and others. The word Afrika was in existence in Africa before the white man came there. And you know what it means? It means birth of man. So you got to identify with who you are. If you want to use other names, but don't let nobody tell you you can't call yourself an African. I don't give a damn who they are or what they believe. The next one is African identity. You must have race pride. There's nothing wrong with being proud to be black. You're proud to be Christian. You're proud to be Muslim. You're proud to be Hebrew. You're proud to be this. You're proud to be that. And there's nothing wrong with your religious pride, but you must also have race pride as well. Raise your child with that. Independent African political power, independent African economic power, unity, and the last thing is that the nationhood must be based in Africa. All of you don't need to go back because some of you are going to cause more problems than you saw. But you must have a centralized nation base, and it must be the richest planet, the richest continent on the face of the earth. It must be Mother Africa. That's where the international government must be based, although we can live anywhere we want on the face of the earth. And believe it or not, if you don't decide to get up and work with Africa or relocate or do something, sooner or later you're going to be forced to do it anyway. Because what happened in Katrina, they're going to keep on doing that. They're going to not stop. There is no stopping until the black man is gone. And I'm going to leave you with this. Many of us think that they just want to get rid of the grassroots blacks, the strugglers, the freedom fighters. Many of us think that people like Tiger Woods and Barack Obama will always be safe. That's not true. Do you know what eugenics is? Eugenics means to exterminate the gene that produces the people. So that means that they must exterminate everybody. So the goal is not to keep a few here and a few there. The goal is to get rid of every last American-born African. Only then can white supremacy be completed. But guess what? The gift and the curse is one and the same. If black people in America stand up, black people all over the world stand up. Everybody's waiting on us to wake the hell up and do what we need to do. And they will follow suit, just like they follow us in the NBA, just like they follow you to get your hair permed. They will follow you to revolution. Join an organization if you're not in one, but make sure it's a serious organization, not with a leader who just wants to pimp the masses. It must be a serious organization. But you join one if you can't find one, then you start one. A non-religious one, church plus something else, because some of y'all said, I already belong to the church. No. The church plus one. And I'm going to leave you with a quote, Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, who said, without confidence in self, you are twice defeated in a race of life. Without confidence in self, you are twice defeated in a race of life. With confidence, you have won even before you have started. Frederick Douglass, an ancestor of mine, who said that, in so many words, I'm going to paraphrase the quote because it's leaving me right now. Black folks want things easily done, but they don't want to put forth the sacrifice and the struggle that's necessary to do it. Our problem is we want progress, but we don't want to lose no money. We want progress, but we don't want to lose our jobs. We want progress, but we don't want to lose our life. Guess what? Especially for Christian folk, I know you know this well. There can be no redemption without bloodshed. So in order for us to get where we need to be, some of us are going to have to be willing to die. Thank you very much.
I'm going to give him a couple minutes to
going to give him a few minutes to calm down, but I'm not going to take it off because he said so many things. We're just going to let you ask him a few questions right now before Professor Griff comes up here and makes you forget everything that he just said, because everything that he just said was important. So if you have any questions for the brother now, especially pertaining to your kids and education, ask you now, please. Yes, sir.
What's your outlook on music, like as far as music, not in just, you know, the hip-hop community, but in music in a whole?
I think music can be a very revolutionary force. It always has been. When you look at any great revolutionary movement, there was music to go with it, whether it was an African movement or a non-African movement. But just like music can wake you up, music can also put you to sleep. In fact, when you come into a community, if you don't know the mental state of the people, all you have to listen to is the popular tunes that they play. So if you come into the black community today and listen to our most popular music, it is self-denigrating, it is self-respecting, and it is consciousness lowering. You follow me? At the same time, if you listen to some of our most popular music in the 60s, although you still had some of that, okay, some of the more popular tunes were stuff that was a little bit more liberating. And the responsibility of the black artists is, if they're going to engage in the foolishness, you must also put some cuts out there, okay, that are very, very powerful and spiritually uplifting. They're not doing that. Now, don't get me wrong. There was black on black crime before gangster rap. But gangster rap glamorized it. And since the presence of gangster rap, the degree of black on black violence has climbed. So for any rapper to stand up here and say that my music does not impact the black on black violence, that's a psychological lie. Music, and there's been studies to show that music can actually determine behavior, not to the extent that I go out and kill somebody, I can blame the rapper. I'm not talking about that. But there is an influential aspect to the music. In fact, in ancient Africa, they say that there is a part of your spine, you understand, that corresponds to every sound of music. And that in Africa, certain music was played to help your spirit come from your belly and go up to your consciousness. You see? So it's a very liberating force. The problem is black music is totally owned by Europeans. That's why when people say hip-hop culture is progressive, culture is transforming, and most of all, you must own your own culture. Black people don't own rap music. You understand? Even the big-time people who we like to worship, they don't even own their own stuff. Okay? Universal Records, Interscope, there are no black people sitting on those board of directors. Nobody. You understand? But the people on TV are making you think that they own something. They own a little piece of something. But the bulk of the music that they make is going to somebody else. Music is America's second leading export industry. Did you know that? America makes more money off there's only one other product, and I forget what that was, that America makes more money off than music. Music is America's second leading import industry. If we control just what we made, we'd be trillionaires by now. You follow me? But we got to go back to the way black musicians used to operate, which was sell their own product. See, if you're in music, even if you're in publishing, you got to make a decision. I want to get famous and keep a little bit of what I make, or I don't get famous and keep everything of what I make. Do y'all understand? It is the central dilemma of every black person in business. If I sign with a big distribution company, I can get real famous, but my amount of the profits is going to be low. But if I continue to sell out my trunk, I won't be as famous, but I'm going to keep all the money. What do I prefer? I say don't be famous and keep all the money. We got to get back to ownership, because until you own, you don't control. And we got to make sure we influence our children to become owners of whatever industry they decide to pursue. If a child wants to be a doctor, you got to give us another black hospital, because we ain't had one. You understand? If a child wants to fly airplanes, you got to give us that black airline. Okay, if you want to be a lawyer, you got to own your own firm. We got to stop making our kids think it's comfortable to serve white people as long as you make a six figures. We are not after profit. This is where we mess up. Profit is not our goal. No. Power and control is. See, you don't have to be rich when you have power and control. Look at all the money black folks got. You understand? But you have no power. White man got power. He don't need the cash, because if I'm powerful, I don't need money. I can make you do what I want done anyway. Money is unnecessary. Money is for people without power. Right. We need the power and we need the wealth. We keep telling our kids that money is power. No, wealth is power. We got to take the money and translate it into business, real estate, property, investments. Always make the joke. Give me an Oriental kid and a black kid. I'm going to get an Oriental kid $1 million, I'm going to get a black kid $1 million, and I'm going to come back 10 years later. The Oriental kid will probably have tripled that money. He will own businesses, international conglomerates. You know what? That black kid will have about 4 or 5 trucks, some old rusty-ass rims on them, a whole bunch of old played-out sweatsuits, old chains and sneakers. Y'all know what I'm talking about. You see that? All we want to do is spend money. See, one thing in this, and I'm going to leave on this, well, unless there's another question. The goal of slavery was to make the slave.
a willing accomplice, and its own extermination. The goal of slavery is to make the slave a willing accomplice in its own extermination. If I can get you to play a role in your own extermination, I don't have to be in your neighborhood. If I can get you to play a role in your own extermination, I don't even have to be in a prison with you. I don't have to be in the corner store. I know what you are taking. As Dr. Carter G. Woodson said, who was a Garveyite, he said, what? What's a slave? If you control a man's thinking, you ain't got to tell him to go to the back door. He'll go on his own. Right. It's the socialization. It's the conditioning. And if he goes back there and it ain't no dog and brother, he'll knock one down and make one himself. It is the power of mind control. Slavery, post-traumatic slave disorder, is nothing but controlling a man's mind. And this is what I say to my revolutionary brothers. Some of them think they're revolutionary, but they're not. Okay? This is what I got to tell them. Before we can do anything else, we got to have a mental revolution first. Do y'all understand?
Yeah.
People want to go out there and fight with guns. People want to go out there and let's go build this. We can't. You want to know why? Because the two biggest enemies in the black community is what? Jealousy and envy. I don't give a damn how many books you read until we stop being jealous and envious of one another. We ain't going to get no. How many times have y'all been in meetings with a bunch of other young black folks and somebody destroyed a whole damn thing? Jealousy and envy. Even when you study our history, you see some of the greatest black men we ever had were destroyed by other great black men because of jealousy and envy. And the problem with jealousy and envy is this. If this man has a secret that can liberate all black people, but I'm jealous of him, my jealousness is selfish. You know why? Because I will kill him knowing he may have been the one to free all y'all. So if I'm killing him, do I really care about y'all? Hell no. I care about myself and my ego. So us black men, before we come together as men and get done what we need to get done, you got to kill the envy and the jealousy. Got to, and that's why I respect Dr. King and Malcolm so much, because for the first time, two serious black leaders, other than Frederick Douglass and Martin Delaney, was able to come together, agree to disagree, and King and Malcolm was actually going to join forces. Malcolm met with Coretta Scott King 3 weeks before he was assassinated. Dr. King was in jail at the time. They had sketched out a program for the Organization of Afro-American Unity and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference to come together and work together. J. Edgar Hoover found out about that. You know what happened to Malcolm. And then 3 years later, the army, you see what they did to King. But that was the first time that two major leaders was able to put the ego to the side for the good of the race. If you got ego, you can't be for us. It's really just that simple. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm into like the conscious rap thing.
Okay.
I write the music. I write the lyrics and I listen to all that kind of stuff. How many years from now do you think it would take to like get? If you remember like the late 80s and early 90s when it was on the mainstream with the conscious rap, Public Enemy, Poor Righteous Teachers, and the like. How many years from now do you think like you get it, not just back to that, but it could be a movement where we can just, you know what I'm saying?
Right. When conscious artists such as yourself and other brothers decide that we're not going to let the major music labels co-opt our music. That's what happened. You follow me? The conscious rap movement never had to end if we didn't decide to start doing business with the majors. You see that? If you keep it in the neighborhood, you can distribute on your own. See, the principal problem with black people is this. Whether it's music, clothing, books, we do not have a distribution network. Do you understand? So whatever you want to sell, you got to strike a deal with a European. And they're going to charge you so much money that they're going to make all the money and you're only going to get a few pennies, even though it was your mind power that went into the invention. I don't care if you make shampoo, food, cocoa butter, music, you understand? Whatever you do, if you cannot distribute it internationally, you are at a standstill. And until black folks decide to invest the millions of dollars necessary to create an international distribution conglomerate, we'll never get anywhere. And that's the issue I take with the rappers, because they have enough money where they can create the international distribution network. You know why they don't do it? Jealousy? Envy. And they're afraid that if it don't work, they stand to lose millions. What they start to realize, you're losing millions now because you're only getting 75 cents off each album. Hell, you're damn near being flipped.
That's why we have Black and Nobel.
And that's why we got Black.
I want to talk to you about being on a merry-go-round. You know, a merry-go-round will go round and round and round and round, and if it doesn't stop, you'll remain in the same position, but in order to get off that merry-go-round, you're going to have to put into some effort. And this is pretty much what happens to us on a regular basis. We get up in the morning, shower, shave, get a little bite to eat, make a beeline to work. We get a lunch break, coffee break, another lunch break, and then at the end of the day, we go home. We do this for 360 days a year. And at the end of the year, we're looking for something different to happen financially, but we don't realize that we're in the same position that we were in the year before because we keep doing the same thing. the definition of insanity is keep doing the same thing over and over, looking for a different result. And of course, no different result is going to happen unless you put forth some effort to get off the merry-go-round. Now, one of the major solutions to the problem is to look at your current situation. If you have a mortgage, if you got credit card debt, if you got student loan, if you got a problem with the Internal Revenue Service, if you would cancel these contracts, if you have a mortgage that gives you, if you're paying $800-$900 a month on a mortgage, if you cancel that, that's $900 a month in your pocket. If you have a student loan, you're paying $500-$600 a month on that, that's $500-$600 a month in your pocket. If you Internal Revenue Service asks you for $10,000 that you owe them, you cancel that contract, that's $10,000 that you don't give them. It's very, very simple math. But if we don't make any effort to get off the merry-go-round, we remain in the same position. I would like to recommend you to go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and the package is available there now for you to cancel those contracts.
Okay, Morris, we're back, and I want to say that we will be back Wednesday evening with another broadcast, and I hope you all got something out of this. And as far as I'm concerned, it's very, very informative. And we also want to add that if you're on your social site, send me a friend request. If you're on Facebook, LinkedIn, or wherever you are, Twitter, it doesn't matter, send your friend request to Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and I will grant that. And if you're on Facebook, we'll give you access to my wall and where we place our articles and, of course, all our broadcasts and listening to various groups and stuff that we have. And I certainly appreciate you all for tuning in, and we're going to bring this thing to a close. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and until next time, you all have a good evening. Okay?
A long time coming, but I know.